All right, welcome everybody, and I'd like to call to order the October 15th, 2020 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. So as people might be able to see, Mrs. Powers is joining us via Zoom, if you hear her voice. And now if you all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So tonight we have a couple of presentations. First, I'd like to welcome Dr. Jason Orsina, the Union County Health Commissioner.
Madam President?
Yes, sir.
We do need to approve our agenda.
We do. Sorry, yes, we do. Thank you. I would accept the thank you, Mr. Smith. I accept a motion to adopt our agenda.
I'll second that.
Motion by Mr. Smith, second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Now we can move on to our presentations. We're going to have an update from Union County Health Department Commissioner, Dr. Jason Orsina.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate being here and having the opportunity to speak with all of you. Before I get started, are there any specific areas of interest that you'd like me to speak on as I go through the presentation and speak tonight?
I have a question.
Yes?
Regarding the future of the quarantine regulations, is it still going to remain within 6 feet, greater than 15 minutes into the future?
Yep. Actually, I'll touch on that as we're going through.
Okay.
That's all right. We'll just do that as part of the presentation. Anything else you want me to make sure I hit as I do opening comments? Okay. So just broad strokes here, and I hate to go back to the history a little bit, but I think it's important to touch upon what's led us to this point as it relates to the school system, not just Marysville School, but all the schools in Union County. I'm sure you've heard from Superintendent Allen how often we've spoken over the last several months, how regularly we've met, really a group of all the educators in Union County have met and continue to meet every week. One of the things when we first started our planning for the school year was coming up, what was the primary goal? And all of us agreed that the primary objective for this fall reopening was to get kids back in school full time. That is the objective. The question is, how do we do that in a way that reduces risks to the greatest extent possible, so that there's stability when the schools are open, and along with that, recognize that you're going to have cases during the school year. And what does that mean when you have a case? And how you handle that case really influences whether or not you'll be able to remain open after that case has occurred. So that's the context in which everything that comes after has to be kept in mind. So I give really nothing but praise to all of our superintendents and our administrators in our schools, including Marysville, for all the work they've done. They have been remarkable folks to work with, and they have taken all the best guidance and advice that has come down from the experts at both the state and national levels and applied that in a way that was meaningful and practical within the community. As of right now, there's not more that you could do to reduce risk within your community. You've done it. You have the mask requirements and you have good compliance with that. You have good surveillance of kids who are ill, and there's communication moving daily between my office and your office. So that's in place. You have barriers and you have social distancing. And all the HVAC and other type of environmental changes you can make, you have made at this point. So you're in a good place relative to all the things you can control. The only one that's missing right now for you, and this is not a local issue or even a state issue, it remains a national issue, is a lack of a testing strategy, mm-hmm. and adequate screening to test kids who may be symptomatic and ill with COVID-19. That is, one piece is still missing. If you listen to the governor or follow his press releases as it comes out, he's acknowledged that within the last few weeks, that that is the last piece. Because we have dealt with testing as it relates to long-term care facilities, nursing homes. We've dealt with testing in prison systems. And I don't mean to equate schools with those two institutions, but you are the last big congregate setting that still exists within the state that does not have a testing strategy. So we've been trying to work on that, and it is still an issue of availability. There's still not good availability of testing, and we are working through that now with the governor's office as well. So we're hoping we'll have a testing strategy. Our goal is for the holidays. So in terms of what you've done, you're on track at this point. What has been our experience with cases in children? Just today, I looked at the data that was current through the weekend and did a little bit of review. And what we have seen, as our experience just broadly speaking, is a slow and steady increase in cases of all ages since the inception of the pandemic back in March. After every holiday period, we see a spike, and then we come down to a new plateau that's a little higher than the last plateau. So we saw that first after Mother's Day, we saw it again after Memorial Day, July 4th holiday. And then, beginning in about June, we really start to see cases of children begin occurring. And we saw that same pattern that we saw with adults in terms of case increases with children. It mimicked it almost exactly. If we see a spike in the adults over the July 4th holiday, we saw a spike in kids. The only distinction between the adult cases and the childhood cases is on hospitalization. We do not have at this time a child that has been hospitalized with COVID-19 that we have record of. There may have been ER visits, there may have been urgent care, but not hospitalization. And we don't have any deaths attributed to COVID-19 of children in Union County at this time either, thank you. But we've seen the slow, steady progression. The largest increases in the number of cases occurred in July, and that increase has been much greater than what we saw previous to that, and it's continuing to go on. Since September, our experience in county has really become quite aggressive in terms of disease transmission. We have seen multiple weeks in a row where we're receiving 40 or more new cases in a week's time. We hit a new high over the weekend with 60 cases reported in the last 2 weeks. So we are seeing a significant increase in transmission. What I can tell you is that overall, it is associated with unregulated social events. Now, there are a couple of changes in what we've seen in terms of our history with disease transmission, and I'll get to those. But the cases involving children, and again, I do not know from our record whether they are current students in school or not. All we have is the district in which they live. Unless we're doing contact follow-up, and then a deeper record will show if they have contacts within the school. But prior to the start of school, we didn't record that information. It is almost always involved with social activities, not the school day. We are not really at this time, we have no evidence of transmission that is occurring during the school day. We have lots of evidence of transmission occurring after the school day. We have a lot of evidence of children who are become cases after being at a birthday party, slumber party. Kids on sports teams have been hit by disease and disease transmission. Yes, sir.
Yeah, in Dick Smith. If the cases are not occurring in school, do you have some understanding of why that is? Is there something that you believe is preventing the spread within the school?
So, this is speculative at this point. But given what we have seen in research relative to the barriers that the school has implemented and the social distancing, and the experience we've had with businesses. So to date, most of what the school has done is implement what most of our businesses implemented back at the beginning of their reopening. The social distancing, the barriers, keeping sick people home, you did the same thing. And our experience with all of those has been the same. We don't see transmissions during the workday because we know that masks, and there's a lot of evidence, that the masks really reduce the amount of viral transmission that occurs. We know social distancing is absolutely critically important to reduce the likelihood of transmission as well. And it's not either or, it is both. All the research points to, and the governor reaffirmed this again, the key component to reduce transmission is both a mask and social distancing. And I think our schools, given the experience they've had with their student body and their faculty and their staff, implementing these changes and holding them up is really reducing the spread. And so you're seeing transmission events occur where those aren't being enforced. So you see them at a birthday party because the governor said it today. We become complacent when we're comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm very comfortable with my family. We don't wear a mask when I'm home in my house with my wife and my children. I don't imagine other people do. And that's okay, unless you're sick. That's okay as long as you know the exposure of everyone you're doing that with. And what we're seeing is folks are getting together, engaging what would in other times be normal activities. And their comfort is prompting them to not take those precautions, it seems to be. And so we get social distancing falls down, mask wearing falls down, and then we see transmission. Over the last month, we had our first couple of outbreaks we associated with the business. And in those outbreak investigations, at least in one of those, folks were doing a good job wearing a mask, except for, and then there was just this one activity that went, well, we're outside, we can probably go without a mask while we're outside, which is true, the risk is lower. But in this case, the social distancing was falling down at the same time. So without a mask and without the social distancing being adhered to, that big open area doesn't do a lot for you at that point if someone is truly sick and shedding the virus. And so we had a small outbreak begin with that business. One of the things we deal with time and time again is the idea that everyone's been exposed at this point. We've been dealing with this since March. Clearly, everybody's been exposed. Prevalence studies that have been done to see just how many people have antibodies or are currently ill for COVID-19 are showing on the high estimate in July, about 3% of the Ohio population has actually been exposed to the disease so far.
Wow.
So part of our good fortune over the last several months, which I have been very clear, I do attribute a lot of what the governor did to slowing transmission. I think the actions he took, whether you agree or disagree with them, for Union County, it definitely slowed transmission because we're on the border with Franklin County. And in March, Franklin County was falling apart. And so much cross-traffic comes out of Franklin County, I was very concerned. All the steps we took, the time we gained to do just what you're doing today, the social distancing, the video conferencing, the mask wearing, the changes in the HVACs, they seemed to have helped. We knew we were never going to stop the disease progression. All we could do is slow it down enough to try to stay ahead of it so we didn't have massive outbreaks. Right now, we've moved from moderate transmission, which we've been in for a while, to high transmission, and we've been there for over a week. It's a new level for us to be at, and we're not alone. Most of Central Ohio is in that place. That does change the dynamic a little bit for us. It causes some concern about where this could end up, particularly as we go into the holidays, which is probably our next biggest test, is how well can Ohioans do to really prevent transmission over the holiday season. And it'll be hard. We know it'll be hard. So, in answer to the question that the board member asked, Ms. Savage asked, quarantine. As you start to consider going back full-time or remaining hybrid, be very clear, that is a decision for the Board of Education to make, and it is yours. I told you you've done everything you can do to mitigate risk at this time. It's now for you to decide what steps you want to take and where you're at with your comfort level based on what the administration is telling you, superintendent is telling you, with their ability to deal with cases as they come. Because the one thing that will continue at this time, because this question has come up from other school districts many, many times at this point, what about the quarantine requirement? And the simple truth is, everyone is still saying quarantine needs to be in place if you're within 6 feet of a case for more than 15 minutes. regardless of your age, regardless of your health status, and regardless of whether you're wearing a mask. And that's not just an ODH, Ohio Department of Health, saying that, or CDC saying that. That is our children's hospital saying that. That is our researchers saying that. That is Ohio State University saying that. The mask is a primary preventive barrier for transmission, source control. It provides a little bit of benefit, maybe, the research is showing about contracting the disease, maybe. It's not clear yet, but it definitely prevents transmission of respiratory droplets, which are the primary carrier that we believe at this time. So the risk of transmission is low. So back to the school issue, why don't we see it in the school day? Because you implement one of the most important pieces. The other thing you've implemented is 6 feet of distancing. Mm-hmm. When we do quarantine, it is to prevent an outbreak. It's not to prevent transmission. If transmission has occurred, it occurred already. When we move folks into quarantine, it is to prevent an outbreak. It is to prevent the closure of a school because you don't have enough people to operate your building or a business or fill in the blank. That's what the purpose of quarantine is. It's a secondary prevention. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm sorry, I can go on. Can you tell I lecture periodically? It just keeps going.
In your sleep, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I was wondering if the definition of a case is changing over time. What is the definition of a case?
A confirmed case would be one that has a confirmatory laboratory test, PCR test, that shows COVID-19 infection and diagnosis of COVID-19. It can also be someone, a confirmed case can also be someone who has confirmatory test and exposure to someone who has the disease, so we have an epidemiological link to another case. You can have a probable case if someone has an epidemiological link and is symptomatic but doesn't have a confirmatory test. So that would be a probable case, which we report out in our reporting. We report both, but we separate them out so you can see the difference between the two. Yes.
I've got when you were talking about testing strategies, first I'm just kind of curious, you know, you hear a lot about false negatives, false positives. What's your comfort level with the current test that we're using?
The PCR, the one we use for confirmatory testing is PCR. I have a fair amount of comfort level. Mm. There's a lot of complexity to this particular topic. But the easiest way to conceptualize it is, if you don't believe in the PCR test for COVID-19, you are sort of dismissing the PCR test when it's used for every other test for virus that we use everything on. And some folks may. I mean,
right.
There are people who will. But by and large, if my doctor tests me for a virus, it's going to be a viral test, and they're going to use PCR. So from a testing strategy, it is a fairly solid, well-used, well-trodden path for confirmatory laboratory testing.
Okay.
There is always a chance for a false positive. That's true of any laboratory test. There is always a chance of a contaminated sample. You probably have a larger chance of that creating a problem than you do just something in the lab itself creating the issue. But it is fairly low in the grand scheme of things. And with any test for a highly infectious communicable disease, you would rather have a false positive than a false negative.
Right.
And the risk of a false positive still at this time, based on the data they have, remains fairly low. The screening tools that are used, the Abbott rapid test that you hear a lot about, Binax one that I think the feds are now providing to the state, those have a greater chance of a false positive. But that's why a screening tool like the rapid test should always be paired with a PCR test. You may recall when the president was coming to visit Ohio, that's exactly what happened with the governor. They were using a rapid test. Rapid test came back positive. They did a second rapid and then PCR to get the final result. And the PCR is the more accurate test.
Okay.
So I hope that answered your question. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier that the kids have not been hospitalized in Union County. Is there also a difference in how they transmit when they are infected? Like, are they less likely to transmit it to kids or adults than let's say, adolescents or adults? I'm talking about like elementary kids or...
Sure. So when we talk about children, we do sort of separate out two different populations of children, sort of the 10, 12, and younger, and then sort of the late adolescents, the middle school and high school kids. What I can tell you right now is the science is evolving all the time. It cannot be stressed enough. This pandemic is for a novel virus that's never been around before. We've learned a lot in a handful of months, but there's a lot more that's still unknown, and the science isn't settled on. So when we look at that very question, there is some evidence that younger children may not be as infectious as older children, but it's not clear. It's still unknown. There's a lot of the evidence about sort of the epidemiology side of it. So not a physician. So asking me questions about individual cases on children, not my forte. So I'll talk to the public health side. When we look at the epidemiology of it, do kids in younger grades spread the disease more often? That's another part that's still not clear. So we have some studies that come out of particularly foreign countries that show they don't seem to be transmitting as much. We have some studies that show outbreaks that are rooted in children of the very ages we're talking about being the index case that spreads the disease to multiple families. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really clear yet. That's the best answer I can give for you. When we talk about later adolescents, the story changes a little bit, and the evidence seems to be leaning more towards they are like adults in terms of how infectious they are, the likelihood they will spread the disease, the likelihood they will display symptoms of being ill. The one thing we see very clear in a lot of the research is younger children do not display severe illness or even mild illness at the same rate that adults do or even older children do, which may be part of the reason why we're not identifying ill children at the same rate as well. It's one of the questions that's hanging out there. So when we talk about testing strategy, part of what we're talking about is the idea of finding out are asymptomatic children mm-hmm. in school or not. Mm-hmm. So that when we have cases, and we're talking about quarantine, we have a process by which we can clearly identify a case. No suspicion, we know it's a case, we know what we need to do to act. And track all the people that may be involved in that accurately.
So I just want to clarify a couple points because there's a lot of discussion in the larger community. So regarding no child has been hospitalized or death in Union County. So according to the Ohio Department of Health, 1,184 children have had positive tests and a total of 686 teachers or staff have had positive tests. But the website, Ohio Department of Health website, does not track hospitalization or, heaven forbid, a death. Do you know statewide, have there been any hospitalizations or deaths of students or teachers?
I wouldn't want to answer that without going and checking. Okay. I think I know the answer to the question, but I'd rather confirm it before I share that.
Okay.
So, but in terms of Union County, I'm very confident in that answer as of tonight.
Okay. So I have a second question regarding quarantine. There seems to be an assumption by some people that if you are quarantined once, it's kind of a one and done thing. Is that a true statement, or could a student be quarantined multiple times based on different exposures?
Sure. So the confusion may come in the use of the language. So a lot of folks will say quarantine, and what they really mean is isolation. If you are ill and confirmed positive for COVID-19, there is a presumption that you have some immunity for several months. It's not clear how long the immunity lasts. It's another one of those things that they're studying to try to get a sense of. But you are not counted and required to be back in quarantine if you are in exposure within 3 months of your recovery. So we have this period of time where we assume you are protected against the virus, and so you're not going to contract it and then shed it to other people again. But that's for someone who is in isolation and ill with the virus. That's not for someone who is asymptomatic and in quarantine. So keep in mind, quarantine is for someone who is healthy, mm-hmm. that does not show any sign of infection, no sign of a virus. It is that fire break between the isolated case who is ill and shedding the virus and all the other folks in your community, in this case a classroom or a school group. That is the purpose of a quarantine. So you could be in quarantine more than once. And we do have folks that do, unfortunately, end up in quarantine again. We've seen a lot of transmission in households. So even with, when I'm talking about the cases of children that have been ill, oftentimes you see infection travel between members of the same household. So it's not always clear if the child brought it in or a parent brought it in, because sometimes they're almost simultaneous on the testing. But we then say move to the other children in the household, or the other parent in the household. And every time that happens, the quarantine clock restarts. And so you can have, you know, a quarantine that begins, and you're part of the way through it, and then someone else in the household becomes ill, and now the household remains in quarantine. Because the virus can present itself for up to 14 days after exposure. Mm-hmm. So somewhere between day 1 and day 14, someone can become ill with the virus. So we're very confident that day 14, if you're not ill, you're not going to become ill. You're outside the window of when that virus would manifest and you show symptoms. But that's why that often happens. We get part of the way through a quarantine, day 6, day 7, someone else in the household gets ill. And it becomes problematic at that point.
Does that then extend another 14 days on the quarantine?
It begins 14 days from the last contact with an ill person.
Now, does the institution of testing help to shorten the quarantine? So if Ryan was infected, I go into quarantine, can I take a test within 14 days and find out that I do not, based on that test, have the virus, and therefore I no longer need to be quarantined?
It does not. Yeah. Because the virus can manifest at any time in that quarantine period, the test only tests whether you are sick. The viral load you're carrying is enough to register on the test the day you take the test.
Okay.
So we often hear this, particularly from employees. Their employer needs them back at work and say, well, we're going to test all the employees who are exposed.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you can certainly do that. However, they're still in quarantine because they may be healthy today, but 3 days from now, 4 days from now, 5 days from now, they can become ill.
And then a second question. I know that there have been reports of adults that have had issues with cognitive ability or headaches or some kind of long-lasting consequence of COVID infection. Do you have any information on children as to whether there are, and I'm kind of guessing a no, but, you know, is there any information that children that get the virus could suffer long-term issues?
We have no information at this time. It's another area of study. One of the concerns from public health officials, as well as pediatricians, children's hospital folks, is exposure with children and mild cases and asymptomatic cases. What happens in 2 and 3 months later? What does the virus and exposure to the virus really mean? Because we just don't know. I hate to keep coming back to this, but novel coronavirus, we just don't know what its impacts are going to be long term. And we are seeing reports of the quote long haulers who have ongoing symptoms and disability as a result of their illness.
Mm-hmm.
What we have seen with the immunity side of things is folks with there are some research, and it's not confirmed yet. Again, it's just starting some of the research on these topics. That folks with a mild case don't develop the same level of immunity, potentially, the folks that have a more severe case. So even that person who has a mild sniffle and granted maybe a mild fever may not be a sufficient enough case to actually develop the immunity that we see in folks who have a more pronounced case. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of areas of research, a lot of areas of concern, a lot of just question marks in what's coming next.
So the antibody testing,
mm-hmm.
is that strictly through the Red Cross blood donation process? Or is there some other avenue for the antigen testing.
You can have, so antibody and antigen, the two different ones. You can have antibody testing through the private sector. Some folks do choose to do that. I don't know off the top of my head where that's available, but we can certainly get that information for someone that's interested. One of my staff is assigned to the testing side of things, and she keeps track of all of that. The other testing, antigen testing, is also available. The rapid testing is available in many locations. We refer, I think most of them get referred to a lab in Columbus as being the nearest one to Union County for rapid testing right now. And I think there's one in Marion.
Through the health department?
No, a private company. Other questions?
Oh. Diane, did you want to make any comments just about your...
No, I mean, we talk
frequently.
At least once a week, if not more, so appreciate your guidance, and certainly Jason has been very patient with all of the superintendents as we ask lots of questions each week and push his thinking and try to find a common ground where... we can continue to operate and try to get kids back in school more. And I think the other thing that the board has heard a lot about is, you know, North Union
yes.
is going back 5 days, and Fairbanks, and we've talked about that. And I'm not asking you to be an expert, but there is some glaring differences. So I didn't know if you would kind of hit on that a little bit.
Sure. And I can't stress this enough, I'm not an educator. I don't know what it takes for your buildings to run, your system to operate. I trust all of you know that. That's why you're who you are. When I look at it from a public health perspective, and the difference between these facilities, the community has a huge role in part of this discussion. The northern part of the county still remains largely unaffected by COVID-19. The case counts are very low. When I look at the entirety of the experience of North Union School District at this point, their case count is fairly low, all but imperceptible at this point. Mm-hmm. Fairbanks has more, but not dramatically. If you look online, you can see mm-hmm. what this experience is. Sometimes my numbers don't match up with that because I take it all cases from sort of the beginning of the pandemic versus just the school year. But their experience, I think I looked at Fairbanks, they had, right after they started having discussions about going back full time, they had sudden explosion of cases associated with a couple of events. And by explosion, I meant like five. Mm-hmm. But they have a total of 7, and no more cases this week. I don't think they had any more cases last week. So their experience is fairly well controlled, very low. And their population is very different. When we talk about making decisions, I talk about your community is your community. Your student body and the community that you represent is your community and what's the experience in your community. So when talking with Superintendent Baird in North Union, and he early on said, I want to try to go back full time, my questions to him are you comfortable with the safety precautions you put in place? Are you comfortable with your staff know what to do? Are you comfortable with your students know what to do? And are they following the guidance that you've laid out for them? And the answer is unilaterally, yes. Your case counts are low. Your case counts are never going to get lower. You're going to have more cases. Are you comfortable with what's going to happen when you have a case? You understand if you go back full time, the quarantine question that you asked earlier,
mm-hmm.
this is what a quarantine will mean. Are you comfortable with that? Yes. Do you have the plan in place to deal with virtual education? Because you'll have kids that may be in quarantine for 10 days, 14 days, 20 days. Are you comfortable with that? And he won't.
Mm-hmm.
So if your experience in your community was low, you've got everything in place. Here's the same conversation I had with Superintendent Schur down in Fairbanks. And he answered the same thing. The only thing that derailed them is right when they were planning to do it, they had an outbreak. But it was dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're back on track, and I think they're looking to go back to home. Mm-hmm. Those are the same questions I would pose to Marysville. Mm-hmm. You're the largest district in the county. You far outstrip those other entities. Your case counts are much larger than those entities because all the cases that we're dealing with, for the most part, follow the 33 corridor. They are centered in the middle of the county along 33.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a huge surprise. It's not just the density of the population. It's also just the nature of the population and the nature of the community. You sort of are going to have more cases or appears to be that way. So the same would apply. The conversation is the same. You go back when you feel you're ready and you can deal with the outcome. It's really what the best guidance can provide to anybody. Acknowledging that going back, quarantine is going to happen at some point. Are you comfortable with that? Are you comfortable with what that could look like? And if the answer is yes, then you do what you feel you're comfortable doing. Okay. So it's a much bigger shift in Marysville than it is in the other two districts.
Yeah.
And a lot more pieces that have to be in place for it to all work.
Right.
That's as an outsider looking in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah. Okay, well, we can't thank you enough for coming here and providing that update and answering a variety of questions. We really appreciate everything you're doing in our community for our entire county, so thank you so much.
You're very welcome. If someone has a question after the meeting, you
yeah.
can certainly put it through Superintendent Allen. She knows how to get a hold of me, trust me. and I will do my best to research that and get you an answer back.
Okay.
May take a couple of days. But we'll certainly do our best to do it. And thank you, and thank all the Marysville school staff and everything. They have done a remarkable job getting everything open this week. So you guys have a tough position. Trust me, I understand that as well. If you need anything, let us know. We're happy to help.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thank your entire staff as well. So you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Ryan Gross and Kevin Brandbass, the co-MEA presidents. Welcome, Ryan and Kevin. Nice to have you here.
Thanks. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I don't know if I'll be as eloquent as Dr. Orsino, but really just wanted to take a couple minutes to make brief comments. I know you guys got a lot to discuss tonight on really the education side here. Kevin and I have had the opportunity to be in a lot of buildings here over the last couple of weeks and have conversations with staff, and just thought it was important that we here kind of discuss a few of those things. I think first, a big thank you to our district administration, our staff, our support staff, and certainly our teachers in the collaboration, you know, really starting with the task force and moving into the buildings to make this hybrid model work. There was a lot of things that had to change in each individual building, and I think everybody's really stepped up and worked together to try to put together the best model that we can for health, the safety, and certainly the education of our students. And I think we have to continue to use the data that we have available to make those decisions. And so I wanted to share a couple things that I think we've seen within the classroom, and I know that Superintendent Allen will certainly give some more of that later in her presentation. To be clear, the hybrid model isn't perfect. And it certainly brings some inconveniences, both from a teaching standpoint and then certainly from a child care standpoint, and we're empathetic to that. But the hybrid model is working, and I think there's some important things that we have to consider there. First, as Dr. Sam pointed out, the health side of it. It's allowing us to be, follow the social distancing guidelines that have been set to keep, our students and teachers, 6 feet apart during a whole class period. And I think, that's allowed us to keep, our cases down, keep our quarantines down, and certainly allow, our staff to feel safe. But I think more importantly, it's providing, opportunities for best education practices. And so, some things that, as you guys are aware over the last, 3, 4, 5 years, we've, really put an emphasis on personalized learning. And so I think as some of those things are limited, when we look at, group projects or labs or some of those practices that we want to do, and some of those are limited, or maybe we can't do them because of the social distancing guidelines, I think that we're seeing a lot more opportunities for our small group instruction and one-on-one instruction. I would argue that in the 2 days that I see my students, I'm able to spend more one-on-one time with them than I am if I had them for a full week. And so I think, we're seeing still our students achieving because we're able to do some of those things. I also think, it's important that we're still providing some unified arts time, especially at our lower grades. I think if changes were made, some of that may be sacrificed. And finally, we've provided a model of consistency that we can, I think, know what students are going to be in school on what day, what students are not going to be in school on what day, and we have a schedule that's been consistent that hasn't been affected by rising cases or quarantines. More importantly, what I want to really ask of you guys to consider is, what would school look like with 100% return? What changes, what effects to our educational practices really kind of disappear with that? And I think, first, when we look at grades, 5 through 12, a lot of that 6-foot distancing, because of the size of those buildings and the amount of students that are in those buildings and the room that we have, 6-foot distancing is probably not going to be able to happen all the time. So we put a higher risk on our staff, a higher risk on students, and increasing, the amount of possible cases and quarantines. So I think that's one main concern. Two, we look at our younger grades, K through 4, and how we might be able to social distance in those buildings because the numbers are lower. We see that, there's probably going to be situations where now we're asking classified staff, we're asking unified arts staff to take kids in a room full time and try to provide some sort of teaching to them. And I think the other thing that the teachers are, especially, at the elementary levels, those are their kids. Those are that's their class of, 22 to 25 kids. And they don't want those kids to be down the hall having to be taught by somebody else. And they're bouncing back and forth between trying to teach. I think right now they know, hey, I've got these kids in class on Monday and Tuesday, and I've got these kids in class on Tuesday and Thursday. And, ultimately they found a way to, through technology, still reach those kids at home on those hybrid days. So, we have continued to work and improve the hybrid model. I think when you look at unified arts, something that we think is certainly continue to be important at the elementary school level. Many of those teachers are going to be asked to do other things and not provide those to students. When we go back to talk about the one-on-one instruction, small group instruction, with the increased amount of students in a classroom, it's going to make it extremely difficult to do some of the things that are taking place right now with the increased amount of kids. And so, we're kind of moving backwards, and that we're going to be restricted more to, the whole class group instruction, and really not have the ability to continue to do some of the things that have really worked for us. And then finally, I think the increase, where possibly buildings or even a whole district are constantly moving between hybrid, back full 100% to possibly remote, based on, increased cases, quarantines, and those types of things, certainly don't provide that consistency that one week we may be 100% back full, the next week we may be hybrid, and then try to go back full, and then we have to back off to 100% remote. So that's not certainly providing consistency for teachers or students in that model. And so I think to be brief here, and I'm not going to really go into the health side. I think Dr. Orsino really covered that. I think our view and the feedback that we've got from teachers is that we are still able to provide a lot of our one-on-one instruction, small group instruction, that's working for us. And as we continue, we're continuing to work with administration to improve the hybrid model. And so I think that's our goal, is how do we continue to get better at this until we find a way to provide that consistency when we can bring back our kids 100, full-time 100%. So with that, I'm going to turn over any questions you guys have. Mr. Smith, we're gonna limit you to at least two questions. We appreciate your guys' support. I think in the end, we've had, as I mentioned at the beginning, great collaboration with everyone across the board, and it's certainly a challenge. But our teachers have really stepped up to meet all the requirements and provide quality education.
Questions, anyone?
Are you getting feedback from your teachers that the hybrid system is working better for certain grade levels versus other grade levels, or everyone, it's new and everyone's...
I think the you know, the biggest questions become, I think it's the, what I touched on at the end there, is that if we choose to change, how long can we sustain that before we have to move back? So I think there's a worry that we put all this time and work into the hybrid model. I think we're continuing to get better and better and better at it. There's some things that are going on in some buildings that I found out that are pretty amazing, that I'm hoping continue to branch out into other buildings and how we can do things better. And so I think if we focus on that and continue to find how we can be better while still, you know, maintaining the safety and still maintaining the consistency, I think that's the big concern, that if we're going to rush to make a switch, you know, you guys saw, you know, Fairbanks said, hey, we're going back, and then they had to delay it. So, you know, what problems does that cause? And, you know, people are going to make decisions based on that. You know, the child care they already have, hey, we're going back to school, so we don't need it. Oh, hey, by the way, now we have to change because of things that we can't control. What we do control is, you know, I think what we're doing right now, which is the hybrid model and providing consistency.
I don't know how many of the teachers in all the different areas and buildings you've gotten to talk to, but how would you characterize the morale of the teachers in terms of, I know there's extra work that's gone with coming up with this hybrid model, and in some ways it's harder. Are people hanging in there? Do they feel good? Or are people getting burned out? What would you say the morale is of the teachers overall?
Depends on the day of the week. it's with everything else. There's so much uncertainty. There's no right answers. I think, you know, on one hand, certainly, you know, we want to have our kids back full time in the classroom. But how can we do that and maintain consistency? And so that's the worry. And I think, you know, teachers are doing a great job of, you know, trying to service their students in any way and every way they can. Certainly, there's more stress with that. Certainly, teachers, you know, are stressed with that. But I also think that, you know, we've been able to do a lot of good things, and I think the continued positive feedback that we've been able to get, and also seeing a lot of our students succeed while this is going on, you know, and certainly there's cases on both sides of this, like, how we're struggling with this model. You know, how can we better service them? How can we improve to, you know, get more of them on board?
I was kind of curious, like, can you give us an example of how you deal with right now if you've got somebody in your class and they end up being quarantined, or if they end up being a positive case? What's the reality in a classroom? What are your, like, how do you handle things like that?
Well, normally, so the way things are right now, no one else has to get quarantined, but we would provide them daily instruction. On Wednesdays, they would Zoom in if they're well enough to Zoom in. Mm-hmm. But we would, I know on our learning management system that we use at the high school and Schoology, we would, mm-hmm. we would post assignments, we would answer questions there. Mm-hmm. You know, is it the same as being in class? No, but they wouldn't fall too far behind.
Yeah. But like, as part, like with your workload, the more kids that are quarantined, does that add a significant amount of work to you versus them being in, or is it, does that not make much of a difference?
I think right now, you know, we know who's there on Monday and Tuesday and who's there on Wednesday and Thursday. I think when you get into looking at a full return at 100% and quarantines begin to increase, now there's no consistency to that. I don't know who's mm-hmm. out, you know, which days, you know, some kids are out and they're coming back from quarantine. And so mm-hmm. now, as a teacher, certainly that's going to increase workload and trying to track who's out, how long are they out, how do I provide them mm-hmm. The resources they need to do that work outside of school. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the big thing. I don't know what the numbers are currently at, but I know when I saw them last, it was like 35 quarantines And if we looked at that based on the current distancing guidelines and, you know, being back 100%, that would be over 200. So certainly
right.
That doesn't provide as much consistency, I think, as right now. And so it kind of goes back to that question is, you know, when you start weighing those things, you know, on 100% return, is that inconsistency and that comes with being back full time, is that better than, you know, what we're providing right now? And, and, you know, again, I don't know that there's a right answer. I would argue that I think the consistency has been huge for teachers and students.
Mm-hmm. I don't really have a question.
It wouldn't be right if you didn't ask one.
You've used the word consistency repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, we've gotten lots of letters and emails and all sorts of stuff. And certainly there are those that, you know, have a problem with communication with a specific teacher or, you know, getting the right assignments for the kids or, you know, those kinds of things. But I would say the ones that I've had an opportunity to read, there is a consistency in those messages that the teachers are doing an amazing job. And we have heard over and over again how the teachers are stepping up and doing just incredible work. I know for me, one of the great joys is being able to go and visit classrooms and see the kids in the classrooms, and we can't do that. And so one of my frustrations is not being able to really see the type of work that the teachers are doing. I get a little snapshot. I got 5 grandkids that we work on Zoom every once in a while. But, thank you very much, and pass along the thanks to all the staff, because I know you're doing everything that you possibly can, and that from, as you said, it all depends on what day, what the, you know, how the teachers are approaching things. Mask hide the frowns as well as the smiles.
Thank you. Thank all of you.
Well, hey, thank you very much. Please share our gratitude with all of the all the teachers, all the staff, and keep up the good work. All right. Let's see. Next, I believe we are going to recognize some state qualifiers from the spring of last year. So since everything kind of got messed up last spring, we did not want to forget to recognize these state qualifiers. So do we have a video presentation for this? Okay.
And Jonathan will be our narrator.
All right. Hello, Mr. Langhouse. Thanks for being here.
Yes. Good evening. So we definitely wanted to take some time and to recognize our state qualifiers from last school year. Due to COVID not being able to allow us to do so last spring. So again, we wanted to take that moment to do that tonight. So we wanted to start off first with our collaboration with Ohio High Point in the DECA program. We actually had 2 students participate in the international competition. Top 12 finishing in fashion management, Natasha Leiter and Mackenzie Kempton. Really impressive. Here's a nice picture of our DECA state competition team, again in collaboration with Ohio High Point. A lot of smiling faces there from last winter. Now the state results, the kids did very, very well. As you can see, state placers, 5th place, Natasha Leiter in hospitality and tourism, professional selling. 7th place, Maddie Andrews and Olivia Davis in entrepreneurship, innovation plan. 7th place, Andrea Hosko in principles of finance. 7th place, Annalise Willoughby and Elijah Smith in community service project. 9th place, Brody Lewis in financial consulting. 10th place, Sarah Stocksberry and Principles of Hospitality and Tourism. 12th place, Ellie Frankie and Rhea Singh in Buying and Merchandising Team Decision Making. 15th place, Shay Seagreaves in Principles of Business Administration. 15th place, Ashlyn Etherington in Principles of Marketing. 16th place, Brennan Basinger in Professional Selling. 16th place, Foster Cross and David Farley in Sport and Entertainment Team Decision Making. 17th place, Kelton Huffman in Hotel Lodging and Management Series. So a lot of state placers on the DECA team. We did have some state qualifiers too that did not place. We'd like to mention their name and their accomplishment as well. Lincoln Hurd, Business Law and Ethics Team Decision. Mackenzie Kempton, Integrated Marketing Campaign Service. We'd also like to recognize Richard Nielsen, Business Law and Ethics Team Decision Making. Maximus Rangel, Automotive Services Marketing Series. Tyshandra Russell, Business Service Management Series. So again, large representation from Marysville Schools and the DECA program in collaboration with Ohio High Point. Very proud of the kids.
Congratulations. Yes. Wish they could be here with us. But
yeah, and you know what? We see hopefully a lot of familiar faces, even some of our seniors from 2020.
Yeah.
It's great to be able to recognize them.
It is.
Moving on to our 2020 indoor track season from last school year. Again, I'm sure you'll recognize a lot of these faces. Mm-hmm. We'll start off with Haley Cook. She placed 14th in the long jump, 17th place in the triple jump at the indoor state meet. She also set a new school record for indoor track in both of those. Next, we'd like to mention Bryn Holtham, 4x800 relay, 21st place, but she also established a new school indoor track record. Peyton Pierce, 4x800 relay, she helped set a new school indoor record, but she just got injured right prior to the state indoor track meet, so she was not able to participate, but she did qualify. Next, we'd like to mention Leanne Eichhorn, 4x8 relay, who was an alternate and who ran for Peyton Pierce. Tristan Carnes, he set a new PR at 9 minutes 36.8 seconds in the 3,200 meters and placed 14th in the state. Also a new school indoor record. A lot of school records being set for the indoor track program. And then we finished with Jacqueline Witt, a 4x800 relay team member that placed 21st at the state, but also too a new school indoor track record. So a big round of applause for all the indoor track records. Oh, you know what? I forgot about Jenna Rioche. Sorry, Jenna. She actually qualified in multiple events, the 800 meter, the 1600 meter. She elected to only run the 800 meter, and she placed 7th. She also earned All-Ohio honors and set new indoor school records again in both the 800 and 1600 meter. So congratulations to you. And then we're going to move on to our very distinguished FFA program here in Marysville Schools. It's a high honor for the students who earn state and American degrees. This is tough to accomplish. So congratulations for the state degree honorees, Ian Johnson and Aubrey Mosier. And then also congratulations for the American degree in FFA to Corey Lee, Rachel Poling, and Katie Van Hoos. Next, we're going to move on to the FFA state competition that took place last year. Taylor Burnham finished second in the state for general livestock judging. Maria Kessler, she finished second in the state in equine management, fourth in state in nursery and landscaping, the individual division, and then sixth in the state nursery and landscaping team competition. Also, Daniel Snodgrass, he finished first in the state for outdoor power.
Wow.
And then the state competition team that finished sixth place in the nursery and landscaping team division, we'd like to say congratulations to that entire team, CJ Gross, Maria Kessler, Mason Quick, Zoe Thunberg, and Aslan Williams. So congratulations to our FFA team members.
Great. Thank you. We're so proud of them. Okay. I think at this point...
We did send certificates as well.
Okay, good.
And a letter saying they'd be recognized tonight as well. So.
Okay. Great. Virtually. Well, hopefully they're watching.
That's right.
We're so proud of you, and congrats. Next, do we have any public participation?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yes, and then we have the previous ones.
Okay.
The online.
Okay. So we had some previous,
some
online.
Some previous online submissions.
Okay.
Before we moved to in-person public participation.
Okay.
And they were not submitted in time for the last meeting that took place.
Right. Okay.
Okay. We'll start off. Linda Macholoff, 715 Kentucky Circle. Please consider our kids back in school 5 days a week. The education from a wonderful teacher is vital to their success. Parents cannot provide the same level of education. Scott Wigand, 497 Bridal Drive. My kids love school and miss teachers and friends. Sarah Hudgens, 1486 Meadowlark Lane. Kids need to be back in school. Surrounding areas are going back 5 days a week. Are we going to let Marysville fall behind? And those were submitted in, on 9/23, September 23rd. Another one submitted on 9/23. Zach Yoder, 1933, Chiprock Drive. Good evening. I am the father of three children. Our oldest son started kindergarten at Northwood this year. Our son's kindergarten teacher has been outstanding thus far. We have been pleasantly surprised at the level of communication and accessibility with his teacher and the staff at Northwood. The same cannot be said for our Board of Education. While districts of several sizes are all around us resuming full-time in person, Marysville does not appear to have any intent of doing so. The superintendent's video message this week left me shocked as it gave the impression that plans to return full-time aren't even being discussed. The students, parents, and taxpayers of this district are owed an explanation of the precise data and reasoning behind used to evaluate when a return to full-time in-person classes will take place. There must be a plan in place, and you should make that plan public immediately. This family would like to see full-time in-person classes resume immediately to include the 100% virtual period scheduled through the winter. Your decision to ignore the overwhelming majority of parents who responded to your survey in favor of full-time in-person has a far-reaching impact on families and students. This decision must be based on facts and not fear, and it must be made with the best interests of our students in mind, even if that conflicts with the opinions of the teachers union. So far, that appears to not be the case. Please immediately make public your plan for returning to full-time in-person classes to include the precise data and reasoning to be used to make the decision. Thank you, Zach Yoder. Submitted on September 23rd, Sharon Strong, 460 Windmill Drive, Apartment 30, Marysville. I have three grandsons who want and need to be in class so their teachers can help them more. These boys get so upset and frustrated over not finding or missing the Zoom and being counted absent. My seventh grade grandson was found absent for lunch. It was an approved absence, but counted against him. They need the structure, the schedule. If they wear a mask, it should be fine. On September 23rd, Karen Lee Master, 1453, Mill Park, Marysville. My 6-year twin grandsons need to be in school 5 days a week. Zooming and working at daycare is not effective. They are falling further and further behind. I'm very worried about their education. Please help by opening up our schools full time. Thank you. So September 23rd, Gregory Brothers, 482 Maple Grove Drive. I want to start out by thanking the superintendent, the board, the teachers, and the staff for all the hard work and dedication they have shown to keeping our children and the community safe during this pandemic. Since this pandemic started, the district has done a great job informing the community what its plans are and have resisted the knee-jerk reaction back to full five days that a small yet vocal group seems to want. I urge the board to avoid giving into the mentality of, well, others are doing it, so we should too. I urge the board to look at the science and the data and continue to make the choices that will keep our children safe and avoid the chance of having to snap back to full remote by opening too fast. Again, thank you for working hard to make sure our community and children are getting the best education while also keeping everyone safe. September 23rd, Josh Brown, 517 Surrey Lane, Marysville, Ohio. What is the criteria to return to full-time in-school instruction? Is the vaccine being readily available the biggest sticking point, or is it social distancing? I feel like our community needs a complete picture of concrete metrics being utilized to determine which model we continue using going forward. The reasoning for remaining hybrid seems vague. Other school districts around us are returning to normal full class, and we aren't for some reason. September 23rd, Maggie Bowen, 504 West 9th Street, Marysville. Send our kids back to school at 5 days a week. Their health and wellness, and education depend on it. September 23rd, Brenda Rock, 410 Damascus Road. Marysville school children need to go back to school full time. The current situation is not healthy for students. It isn't conducive to good learning. I have a grandchild with severe anxiety and he needs predictability. Going to school 2 days a week is wreaking havoc on his mental health. I can only imagine how many other children there are in this situation. In addition, how are single parents who work homeschooling their children 3 days a week? This would be acceptable if the number of people infected was increasing or was at a harmful level. Numbers are decreasing in half or 7 weeks. This includes infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. Consequences of continuing to act as though we have to stop the spread of this virus without realizing the spread isn't killing healthy people, but is more like a flu virus, is enormous. Please look at the current data trends and make an informed and educated decision for the health and well-being of our children. Also, September 23rd, Jennifer Reams, 1121 Bill Park Drive. I'm inquiring to see when 5 days a week will go back into effect. My daughter is struggling with the hybrid class. September 23rd, Jeremic Chandler, 441 Venture Drive. I would like to go back to school full time, please. The kids want to go back so bad, all this hybrid is too much for them. They want to be back and meet the rest of the school. Please allow them to open up. We are ready. September 23rd, Kristen Warner, 2132 Cantor Street. We as parents should be given the option to send our children back to school full time since all the other schools in the county are going full time. My children are academically behind and struggling. Luke Strang, also on September 23rd, 13 Scott Circle, Marysville. Our children need to be back to school all day, every day. The hybrid model is not working, my daughter is not being challenged, and my tax dollars are being wasted. Zoom classes on Wednesday are 10 minutes long, and there is no new subject matter being covered. The homework assigned on Thursday and Friday is done by noon on Monday. I expect more from my school district. We have been very disappointed. September 23rd, Haley Mans, 251 Source and Drive. In regards to the Board of Education, I am writing to address my feelings towards the Marysville School District considering the change to allow students to attend 5 days a week. I strongly feel it is most beneficial for students to attend school 5 days a week for not only educational purposes, but also emotional purposes.
I have a second grader and a kindergartner attending school this year. My kindergartner has no idea what regular school is like, and my second grader is experiencing the lack of. My second grader is my greatest concern. This is the time she is learning the most essential lessons that we use in life. She has broken down in tears and has cried that she just wants to go to school every day. My children want to go to school, to receive the education and teacher interaction they deserve. My statement does not discredit the time and effort our teachers put into helping our students via online platforms, and I am grateful for all they have done. I just hope for my children to receive the education they deserve. Thank you. September 24th, Richard Payton, 17274 Allen Center Drive, Marysville, Ohio. I would like to have my kids go back to school full time.
Thank you. And then we have two participants who are waiting out in the cafeteria, so you can ask Anthony Given to come in. Hello, Mr. Given. If you would just state your name and address, and then you have 3 minutes.
All right. My name is Anthony Given. I live at 2043 Shetland Street in Marysville. I have three children, and I'm here tonight just to say thank you. Thank you for doing what you have to do at a time where nobody could ever imagine doing what we're all doing now. I'm really pleased with the amount of education that my daughter is receiving. I appreciate the fact that Marysville Schools has put our kids and our community first. I have not held the hand or hugged my 90-year-old grandmother since March. My wife's grandmother died in March. We could not have a proper funeral. My wife's parents are living with us in our house now, and my high school senior son is working in a nursing home. If COVID was to spread in my family, I don't know where to have, because it's going to go beyond just my household. It's difficult. It's a difficult decision for all of us. But I am so impressed with you and with the school district and the teachers doing things they never have been trained to do. And our community should be proud. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Given. We actually have two more. This might be time to stand up and stretch if you'd like to. I'm going to. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, I will. Yeah, I said that to Tony.
Did you?
Yeah. No, that's okay. Good evening. If you would please state your name and your address, and then you will have 3 minutes to address the board, and our treasurer will keep time for you.
John Gogar, 1931 Creekview Drive, right across the street. We walked over here. Mom was getting her hair cut, so I have Matthew, third grade at Northwood, and Annabelle, she's kindergarten at Northwood. So I like to say, we hear a lot about science and data around COVID. The science, as the county health Commissioner said, can be inconsistent, and the data has been known to be flawed. Where is the data on how learning has been affected by the remote learning in the spring and the hybrid in the fall? The data that the hybrid model is not working is in the letter from the parents that were just read. You can attempt to make the hybrid as best as possible, but it will never be equal to in-person learning. I have a couple questions. They're rhetorical questions. We all know them to be true. Is healthcare essential? Yes, it is. So healthcare workers are essential. Is public safety essential? Yes, it is. So police, fire, and EMS are essential. Grocery store workers are essential. My last question, this is not rhetorical, is education essential? I think we will all agree that it is yes. So are teachers essential workers? Everyone else has gone back to work with being proven and proven by parents of students that the hybrid model is not working. We're hiding behind one issue, and that is COVID. There's so many other factors that are affecting parents and students besides COVID. On the topic of other school districts opening back up, I know North Union and Fairbanks are smaller, but now larger school districts like Dublin, they've announced they're going to open back up as well. So everyone is only worried about the unknown, where I say, as Americans, we should go boldly into the unknown. For the sake of our children, for the future generations of America, COVID is not the only issue facing our students, and please consider all issues as you make decisions going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good evening. Hi.
I joined the party, I think, a little too soon.
Wait, can I first ask you, to say, I just want to let you know, we just need you to state your name and your address, and then you'll have 3 minutes, and just so you know, it's an opportunity for you to, you know, share information or questions with us, and if there's follow-up required, we'll make sure that that happens.
Okay.
It's just not a conversation.
Perfect.
Okay, great. Thank you.
My name's Adrienne Woodring. I reside at 1762 Sassafras Court here in Marysville. I am actually a newer resident to this community. We've been here for about 4 years. We have 2 kids in school, elementary ages, third grade and kindergarten. My specific questions are around what is the plan for the rest of the semester and spring semester? And just out of curiosity, what evidence supports this decision? My second question is, may I ask for an understanding as we are offering tech as a special for elementary school students when tech days have been increased on our virtual learning models as is? And my last questions is around what specifics has our district and board implemented for family in regards to counseling and our resources for mental health for our children during this time, and or specifically our parents dealing with this. Specific example is my third grader. On Monday, I was the teacher that day, my husband had to work. She got extremely frustrated with the task, and she just broke down and cried and hit her head really hard. I don't think any kid should ever have to experience that or go through that. And with it being something that's new and trying to navigate that, I think if I'm feeling that way and my third grader is feeling that way, there's probably a lot more of us. So just maybe some different tips that could be for people that we can lean on to try and navigate the situations. So that's all that I have.
Okay, thank you. I'm just kind of looking to my next door neighbor here, Mark Gallagher, handles social emotional things in our district, so I'm glad that he was sitting here, and I'm sure that you guys might have a chance to talk
Perfect.
Soon.
Well, thanks.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. It is now time to begin our reports, and we will start with High Point, I think.
Yep.
Am I forgetting? Okay. All right.
Okay, so regarding the High Point Improvement Project, initial construction has been approved. So this next week or so, they're going to be
laying down storage lots for the all the equipment to come in. They're going to start regrading activities. So this is step one. It's going to be a very, very long process for that. Regarding the school, they've had two positive cases of COVID at High Point, and it resulted in the entire class being quarantined due to it being a medical class, and that even though generally they try not to share equipment, practicing CPR is one of the things that they did, so they re-share equipment. So the entire staff, including the teacher, were all quarantined. And they've been teaching, trying to teach from home at this point. High Point is struggling with substitutes and may have to go full remote if the situation evolves more than it is now. They are teetering on the verge of having to go 100% remote. They also are experiencing some staff quarantines on their satellite districts. So just as a reminder again, mm-hmm. High Point actually interacts with 13 school districts, and they have teachers posted in all 13 of those districts. So some of those districts are 5-day-per-week districts, and the teachers have ended up on quarantine. They have no positive tests at this point, but they do have staff that is sick.
Okay. You said there was one class or one group that was going totally remote because of quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that?
It was the medical. It's the medical
Is it medical tech or something? Or I don't know.
I think it's Allied Tech, maybe.
Oh, Allied Health.
And that was sharing the equipment.
In particular, they had been doing CPR and a CPR dummy.
And that specific example was multiple health departments working together because of the staff where they lived in the district. So it was kind of a joint effort.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they had that. Just kind of going back to what Jason had said and how quickly things can escalate.
Yes.
So they had this one class. Okay, the whole class ended up on quarantine. The teacher's out. Plus now there's been multiple contacts with that teacher with other teachers within other districts. So I'm concerned about the quarantining, the amount of quarantining that's going to have to occur.
Right.
It's the spread of the quarantine that's going to keep kids out of school. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Next, our superintendent's report.
I have a few items, and then I have a presentation that we will share.
Okay.
Just first of all, I want to congratulate the National Honor Society inductees. Couple of our board members were speakers, so that was an exciting night and nice to have a celebration and have people together, and so thank Lois Everett and Dr. Kukas for organizing that, and it was great. Also last week we had the opportunity, Mrs. Devine and I, to meet with the Speaker of the House. Tracy Richardson had brought him to town to brag and boast about Union County, so it was a great job, a great opportunity to kind of share some of the stuff. 3 minutes, I think.
Pretty much.
Of a highlight of our district, but certainly seemed definitely interested in the work we were doing. And we know he was a lead in the cup. He's the cup of the Cup Patterson bill. So had the opportunity to talk about school finance a little bit with him as well. So that was great as well. So tonight, I have a lot of information that I would like to share with you. The last time we were together, the last time we were together, we talked a lot about the concerns of people in the community We wanted to make sure that we went ahead and gave you some information. So tonight I plan to kind of give an overview of our current stats, give you a timeline of what's happened from our last meeting till today, talk about our realities, also give you some data on our hybrid model thus far. As you know, I said we were just getting into our data meetings and looking at our student achievement and social-emotional data. So we'll share that tonight. And then we'll also talk to you about instructional levels and options for switching instructional levels and give you some information and data about that as well. A couple people even said this would be great if we could have a crystal ball and understand the decisions we were going to make and what the impact in the long run would be. But in absence of that, we have worked pretty hard to come up with an evidence-based structure to make decisions and work to try to take emotion out of our decision making in an emotionally charged environment. So when we met with the task force team in the summer, there were really four guiding principles. Number one, to provide a safe and healthy environment for all students and staff to thrive. Number two, to provide access to instruction for a continued learning period and academic development. Three, ensure a consistent and stable learning environment. And four, to support the social emotional well-being. And those are not in any kind of order. Those are just the four guiding principles in which we really went after the work to think about how we might return to school. So currently, we have zero staff cases. We have two staff members that are being tested. We have six cumulative positive cases for staff to date. We have six current quarantines and 26 cumulative quarantines. I can tell you today, this was as of midday. We had some peaks here this afternoon, and they're not reflective in this data. Student cases, we have one current case. We have 29 cumulative cases. We have 36 current quarantines and 87 cumulative quarantines. And when I say all of this data reflects the beginning of the school year and its impact on students. So since we were last together, we've continued our weekly meetings with Union County Superintendents and the Health Commissioner. We had task force meetings and some group meetings. I hosted a medical advisory team meeting, which we've talked about before. It's made up of local practitioners. We've surveyed some parents and also as I talked about, actually parents and staff. And we've also started to move down the path with our data meetings with principals. As we know from the health department perspective, and Dr. Orsina gave us an update tonight, the numbers are continuing to increase in Union County. 106 cases per 100,000, and also you heard him talk about the 60 new cases, but at the time we talked to him Wednesday, it was also 200 plus contacts associated to those 60 cases. So it kind of gives you an idea of the volume that's associated with that. We've seen an increase in outpatient care, an increase in new cases in non-congregate settings. And today, if you watch the governor's update, Union County did turn to the red designation. Here's a map that the health department does send out to the community, and it's posted to the website. It gives you an idea of the townships within the county and where the largest amount of spread is. The darker the color of blue, the higher the number of cases. So you can see that Marysville really kind of lies in that hottest corridor, kind of as Dr. Orsina talked about tonight. This is relatively new. I think it's only been around a couple weeks at this point. This is really cases by school district, so it gives you an idea of the impact at North Union, the impact at Fairbanks, and the impact of Marysville in terms of cases.
Can I? These are cases in the community of the school within our boundaries. So it's not just students and staff. Yeah, it's all cases.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So we met with a medical advisory team, Kim Jude, and our student services director, and Megan Stevens, our lead nurse for the district, meet with doctors in the area, and we opened up conversations about returning to school, talked about the letters we had received, and really in that conversation, they shared emerging evidence that suggests younger students are not as likely to get the disease or transmit the disease. And I think you heard Dr. Orsina talk about that a little different perspective from public health. Not sure if that's due to asymptomatic issues and kids have it and we never know, but the same kind of idea that younger kids tend to not be as sick, and older kids actually tend to act much more like adults. We were encouraged to explore ways to continue to bring younger kids back as a starting point, and it's an opportunity for us to think. So we brought together the task force to share that information and ideas. Dr. Orsina came, we had a Zoom session, to the Zoom session and talked to the group. I shared several of the things he shared tonight. We also shared data and statistics. We also talked about the hybrid model and the benefits and drawbacks to that. And we also shared an idea of starting with that suggestion from the medical advisory team of a tiered response to return to school, starting with our K-4 students. One of the things we shared and the group felt was pretty powerful, and I adjusted it according to our numbers this morning. On the left-hand side, you will see these seats represent our current number of quarantines. On the right-hand side, this would be potential quarantines, and I would tell you this is a conservative estimate. That estimate is done, we said, okay, one test of a student is positive. So we have one case positive. And the eight students around, that visual I showed you a month ago, I guess. So around would be quarantined. In elementary, it stays relatively at eight students. When you move to the high school, that's eight students, four different periods, because they've blocked their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not do any modeling for staff members because it's really hard to track their interactions in 15 minutes a day. So I would say this is relatively conservative, but the task force found it a pretty impactful visual to give you an idea of the difference that may take place as a result of moving to level one.
Mm-hmm.
So here's where we started. On August 20th of this year, and here's where we want to go, right? We want to support an evidence-based return for everyone. So how do we get there? This is the model that we showed at the task force meeting of a tiered return. So November of 2020, and a logical return would be November 16th, and the reason that makes sense, quite frankly, is because that's the end of the trimester.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when virtual students would have the opportunity to return as well. So it'd be one transition point. And at that point, the idea that we talked about at the meeting was to return 4 days a week. Now, 4 days a week is because we have repurposed staff and stretched staff. We do not have the staffing to go 5 days a week and meet contractual obligations. So any model would end up to most likely be a four-day-a-week return. At this point in November, The idea was to keep Creekview, Bunzold, and high school buildings at the hybrid level. In December, we would look to bring Creekview back, the same model, 4 days a week, keeping Bunzold High School and the same. The idea was, let's have elementary students come in, let's learn from their experiences as Creekview would look to transition. We also know the younger the student is, the less likely they are to be as sick and pass that COVID, according to the research we shared. And then Creekview kind of becomes a gray area of the age range that some articles I've shared with all of you. And then at semester time, which again is another logical return, as that's when students from the high school virtual academy could return if they made the choice to do that. So that would have everyone coming back in January of 2021. So that's the tiered approach that we shared. And we asked three questions of the group. We said, given our current situation and the information we have, tell us what you think about the remote learning for November to January. We've said that we would tell people by the end of October, so we asked for feedback on that time frame. The next one was, react to the tiered return to school. So the tiered return plan I just shared with you, we asked them to give us, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What kind of suggestions would you have? Or what more information might you need? And then the last question was, do we need to switch from a hybrid learning model? And if not, what are considerations that should be made to improve that model? So we met, and then the subgroups had follow-up meetings because we needed more time. We couldn't get through all the questions. I shared that information with you, I think, last
night.
This week. So I kind of summarized it on these slides as well. Remote learning time frame, so that period from Thanksgiving to January. The general consensus was to maintain your instructional level, to implement the remote learning model if it was needed. So if you had an outbreak at Mill Valley or Creekview, don't hesitate to put them to remote, but go ahead and continue what we're doing because it appears to be working. There was also a question about the idea of maybe we should consider a two-week full remote right at the beginning of January. So after everyone's been on winter break, maybe we should look at doing 2 weeks after that to ensure the kind of the quarantine time or that time, exposure time, before we would return. The tiered return, the feedback was all over the place. Some people believed we should just postpone it till after the holidays, more like a semester kind of phase in. Some people had the idea that K-1 would be a great start and then move up from K-1. But there was really no general consensus. There was potential, some of the feedback was there was potential for chaos, disruptions to learning. Another consideration was maybe doing the tiered approach by school. Start with Raymond, then move to Mill Valley. Through all of them, there was a strong support to maintain all safety protocols. So people were passionate about 6 feet of distance, face masks, and hand washing still being a part of the practice of our schools. For the hybrid model, the feedback really was around, it's a consistent schedule currently from parents, minimizes quarantines, it's aligned with best practices, there were concerns with at-risk students, continued to emphasize that when students are in school, we should be limiting that screen time, and save that for the remote days. There's class size benefits, and I think you heard that from Ryan and Kevin as well. And the suggestion was made to survey students, which I know they've done a lot of at the building level. we have not done that at a from a district perspective. So currently, I think it's fair to say no one situation, and we know there's no immediate end in sight. We definitely have community interest to stay in hybrid, and we have community interest to move from hybrid. Numbers in Union County, Central Ohio, and Ohio are increasing. We're entering flu season, and it's going to be more inside time. We've really been fortunate with the weather this year, being able to get kids out. The holiday season is on the horizon. We anticipate more travel, social gatherings, which are already problematic, as we know. Mm-hmm. And I think in general, we kind of are experiencing little pandemic exhaustion, where there's less adherence to protocols, increased social gatherings and activities. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we're balancing as we're considering next steps. Data collection, so we've had staff feedback. We have 65% of our certified staff take part in a survey. Nearly 80% of our classified responded to the survey. We did a K-6 virtual academy survey where we had 42% respondent rate, and we surveyed parents, K-12, and we had a 52% respondent rate. So returning to school in the hybrid model, this question was from the virtual school. We had, like I said, it wasn't a huge response rate, but we do know that, and it wasn't their final declaration, I would make that clear, we're trying to gauge their interest, that about 34% of the students, K-6, are interested in returning to the hybrid model.
At the trimester?
What's that?
At the trimester,
yes.
Mm-hmm. So regardless of what we're in, they want to leave virtual and come back to school hybrid or whatever it might be.
We asked the question around, this question was around hybrid.
Okay.
Yep. Data meetings, you know that we do data meetings every year, right? Mm-hmm. And we talk about how we can support buildings better, unique groups of learners, and really it's a time for principals to share what's happening in the buildings, get feedback from the instructional team, and support. So they started this year in October with the same mindset to provide data and conversations on how things are going for students. So I'd like to give you a few updates on the hybrid model and where we are, share academic trends and our social-emotional trends, also share that some of that family feedback and teacher feedback, as well as our student engagement and performance. Not going to read all of these, but one of the things we shared with the task force is really identifying some positives with the hybrid model. So, obviously, transmission rates we've talked about. It does provide for some in-person instruction. And teachers feel safe and generally effective. And really, it helps us have some cleaning protocols in place and allows our support staff to kind of catch up on cleaning and maintenance and things with that Wednesday in between. Some potential barriers we've talked about at risk or at length are how we're connecting with kids on those off days, childcare for families, maintaining routines at home. We've heard a lot from parents, like, really, how do I set up a schedule for my child? Potential equity and access issues as far as people, technology. Some students may not have access to an adult during their learning times, so things of that nature. I would add to that it's really hard, I think, too, for parents to teach their kids to read, so there's emergent readers. Mm-hmm. That's a difficult challenge as well.
I think it's hard for them to teach them, like, just about anything, really. You know, like, when you get that relationship for some reason when it comes to schoolwork, it's just challenging.
Yeah, it can be challenging. So I invited Mark here. We have been tracking academic trends of our students. And as you know, our focus to start the year was we really wanted kids to get back in, develop relationships, and then we'd move into diagnostic testing, and that period has started. And so I'm going to turn it over to Mark, the data guru, to kind of bring this to life.
Thank you, Diane. In order to frame my findings, I wanted to take a little bit of time at the front end to explain my methodology. So I sought to examine the educational outcomes for students currently completing the hybrid instructional model. And I did that in terms of their comprehensive and longitudinal reading and mathematics diagnostic performance in grades 2 through 6. As well as examining social and emotional skill data for hybrid students in grades K through 6 from last year relative to this year. And I'm just going to kind of jump right in here. And how I did this comparison is I calculated the average percentage of students that are either at or above grade level in each of those testing windows or diagnostic windows from the previous 4 diagnostic cycles, so going back to the diagnostic that was given at the beginning of the 16-17 school year, and then the diagnostic results for the current school year, and then also framing that around the range in which those percentages are likely to occur. So what is a typical range for those scores or those percentages to fall within on a year-to-year basis, okay? What you will notice is in my chart here, all the way over on the right-hand side where it says 2021 for diagnostic 1, there's a 5-color band system that is different from the 3-color band system from the 4 subsequent school years. That was due to a qualitative change by our diagnostic vendor. What I can say is that the light green block and the blue block correspond with students that are either testing at the early onset of a grade level, the light green, or that are at the middle or beyond of that grade level in the dark blue box. Okay, and that corresponds with the green and blue boxes on the other previous diagnostic measures, so green being on level and blue being at or being beyond grade level. Okay, so we have an equivalent measure there. And what I can say, at least in terms of reading, our average percentage of students on a year-to-year basis for the beginning of the school year that test on grade level or above is 44.61% of our kids, to be very specific. And in the current school year, 44.62% of our students are at or above grade level at this time in grades 2 through 6. And the typical range in which for those scores to fall is 0.75% plus or minus. So if scores fall, even if they're slightly below or slightly above, as long as they fall within that plus or minus 0.75% range, that is normal, that is typical. So that there's only a difference of actually 0.01% relative to previous school years in comprehensive reading for this year at the beginning of the school year. So by and large, there is no difference from this year relative to previous school years. And that is also evidenced by I have some average percentile rankings down below in that chart. So we're actually, our average percentile ranking for the current school year is the 58th percentile is typically what students test at on this diagnostic relative to previous years. It's actually higher than we have tested in previous years in comprehensive reading. I also did the same exercise for mathematics. In math, our average percentage of students that are at or above grade level is 34.41%. And in the current school year, we had 32.11% of our students that were at or above grade level. But the typical range or standard deviation is plus or minus 0.02%. Which is a difference of 2.3%. So we actually still fall within the typical range of how those scores are likely to fall year over year in comprehensive mathematics.
Is that the red box?
No, that would be the green boxes, and then the light green and the blue box.
Sorry, the red
rectangle. Yes, that would be the red rectangle. Yes. So looking at a complete data set like 2nd through 6th grade is fine, but I also wanted to examine the effects within an individual cohort of students. And the most comprehensive data set of students that I was able to access was our sixth grade cohort. So they were able to match, again, that five-year trend worth of data. Now, you'll notice this color palette is a little bit different. It's because these colors are mapped to an average percent, or mapped to percentile rankings, with blue being students that are at the 75th percentile and above, green being students that are at the 50th to 75th percentile, yellow being students at the 25th to the 50th percentile, and then red being students at or below the 25th percentile. And even looking at just that sixth grade cohort of students, how they did in the way back when machine all the way to second grade to the current point in time that we are in at the beginning of the 2021 school year, there is no significant difference between how those students performed historically relative to today. And actually, they have continued to grow over the course of their academic careers in reading. Okay, slide. I did the exact same thing for mathematics. It produced a similar trend. Again, all within the normal range of what is consistent on year-to-year performance for our students. I also wanted to break down this data in reading and mathematics by subgroups as well. So it's very easy for us to look at overall groups of students, right? All of our kids together. It's easy for us to look at cohorts of students, but I thought it was worthwhile to also examine subgroups of students and how potentially these diagnostic results played out for each of them for the beginning of this school year. And so I examined gifted students, and again, the same trend proves true as previous findings. It was also consistent for students that are economically disadvantaged, so students that receive free or reduced lunch, and students with disabilities as well. And the same proved true for mathematics. For gifted students, students that are economically disadvantaged, and students with disabilities. So those were the academic findings. To shift gears, I also examined social-emotional outcomes. Now, we do not have as a complete longitudinal database as we did for our diagnostic findings in reading mathematics, so my only comparison was how we performed on a diagnostic measure of social-emotional skill from the beginning of last school year. And on that diagnostic, the results for the current school year are ever so slightly higher in terms of students that meet or exceed benchmark expectations for their age relative to the previous school year. And the same proved true for the distribution of those scores and how students perform on that measure. So there is relatively no difference at all between how we performed this year on a measure of social-emotional skill relative to how our students in grades K through 6 performed on that measure in the subsequent, or the previous school year at the beginning of the year.
So if I look at this data, a conclusion I could draw is that our students are not being harmed by the hybrid instruction and the current models that we're using. Is that correct?
I suppose that is an assumption you could make.
Except that it's still, this is still early, correct? Like, when were these data points collected?
These diagnostic results are current as of last Friday.
Right. And they're being compared to a similar time frame in the other years.
Correct.
So it's relevant that way.
Is it measuring more what happened in March and April, or is it measuring more August and September or both? Because those are the periods where we've had this.
I would be hesitant to answer that question because, truthfully, I could not tell you.
Or is it measuring both? Like, this is just where the kids are right now, given everything they've been through.
And I think that's a very safe assumption, is to assume this is where our students are at right now.
Okay. Were you surprised?
To a degree, yes. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. Mm-hmm.
I think about like what Kevin and Ryan were saying, and even what we've heard from some staff members that in 2 days with the smaller groups and the more focused instruction, they've been surprised at how much they get through in a day versus when you've got a full classroom. So I would think that might play into it in some way, but
potentially yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the data story is completely opposite from the, I don't know, 100 emails that we've received.
Yes.
Because many of them have spoken about emotional issues.
Right.
With their children.
Right.
And they have spoken about that the kids are not completing assignments or struggling with the hybrid model.
Right.
So it's important, I think, to keep in mind that these diagnostic measures are measures of capability, not necessarily what may or may not be occurring from a performance standpoint. So that is to say that students possess these social and emotional skills necessary to meet or exceed developmental expectations. But there could be environmental constraints that work against that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in. I've listened to every single letter, like we all have, and we've had meetings with parents, and I take in every single story that we're told, and we all have our own personal experiences as well. I don't think anybody denies that the hybrid model does create some hardships for particular families.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to look at the district as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these data are relevant too and need to be. So I thank you for bringing this into the discussion as well.
Yeah. I know, because I think about, you know, some of those letters where, you know, we're asking for data, you know, and where's the evidence and things like that. And so I think you kind of go back to, you know, people are, they're anxious and they're impatient and they're tired of all of this. And I appreciate the fact that we're being intentional, you know, and that was, it was intentional to start the school year focusing on relationships and then gather the data. And I'm pleasantly surprised with the reading and the math skills. I mean, those to be the same as where they have been in the past. I think that's great data. But at the same time, like what Brian said, we can't discount some of those issues that we know all families are dealing with. You know, like I said, I live right on the way to Edgewood, and I've spoken with some parents and you know, heard stories of, you know, you have multiple kids and some of them are doing great, and in the same family some of them aren't doing so well, and it kind of comes back to our whole focus on personalized learning and the reality that in this situation some kids are going to excel and others are going to struggle, and that's kind of our continued challenge to figure out how are we going to serve every kid. And
I keep thinking also about the fact that in a full classroom with kids, there will be kids that thrive, and
yes,
there will be those that struggle, and there will be those that may not get it. And I know that as a district, we've said those that are struggling and those that aren't getting it are the ones that we're going to target, and I know we've spent a lot of time, and all of this data helps to identify,
right,
you know, those kids. And the situation we're in with remote, hybrid, and so forth must make, you know, the data collection kind of an interesting process. But I've told people that have talked about typically about the finances of education, that the classroom is not an assembly line. You don't just bring the kids in, move them through a process, and they all walk out and they're great. The better example correlating to business is research and development, where you're trying different things every single day, and some of them work and some of them don't. So the next day you come in and you try different things. I know that we heard one comment today, please consider all the issues. Please consider everything. Mm-hmm. And we are, as a body, I think we're trying very hard to do exactly that, to make sure that we consider everything as we look at this. So, thank you.
Welcome. I did the same thing by subgroup for the social emotional data.
Not that you like playing around with data.
Right? Not at all. And those patterns were consistent and again proved true through our subgroups as well.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
So we did survey about success in the hybrid model. We talked when we did the K-12 survey. 63% of the respondents felt the hybrid model was either somewhat successful or very successful. Just about 8% said it was not successful at all. We asked for rationale and reasons why that might be, and we gave people an opportunity to select from some answers. And the number one answer was around more time in class. We talked about challenges. We asked about challenges with in-person instruction. Were there challenges for your children? 60% of them, of the respondents, said no challenges with in-person instruction. Does your student struggle to come on in-person days? And you can see that 5% said yes to that. So a majority of kids did not struggle to come in person. Reasons for struggling for in-person as well. You can see there's struggles with the hybrid model. And it, you may ask, why were there only 136 responses? That's an if-then question. So if they answer...
Okay. Right.
One way it shot them to another question. How about attendance on remote days? So 28.6 suggests that their students struggle to meet attendance expectations on remote days. And why would that be? You can kind of 60% says of those response said that students who struggle to meet attendance expectations during remote, they don't like the remote learning classes, or they don't want to attend. So you can see some of those were cut short. I think this provides you the entire statement. When you drop those out of a Google platform, it only gives you a partial statement, so we wanted to be able to provide those for you. Suggestions to improve hybrid. And similar to, we asked the task force that question as well. So 32.5 felt the hybrid model would be improved with more clarity around academic student progress. So how are we telling students, what are we giving feedback? You know, what feedback are we providing for students on those remote days? Mm-hmm. And 30% said it would be improved with more communication on learning expectations. So, in a little bit, I'm going to show you some Tri-Academy data. But one thing they're doing really well on remote days is clearly articulating for every student who leaves on their in-person day what they need to do over the next 2 days. So that's proven very successful for them. 32%, I think, said they had no improvements to suggest. So that gives you an idea, again, where the length words didn't come all the way out. Health and wellness concerns during the hybrid. 87% said they do not have health and wellness concerns during the hybrid model. And what if we were going to forgo social distancing? So something we've talked a lot about. 34.8 of the respondents said they would have concerns for health and wellness if we compromise the 6 feet of distance. Educational preference without social distancing. Again, 69.8% of the respondents said they would send their students to in-person without. 20% said they were unsure, and about 10% said they would make a switch to virtual academy. So, as we talked about Mark's data and kind of the whole district picture, we also wanted to get some metrics of what was taking place in our buildings. So, we provided for you what our attendance rates look like for each building in person, the remote attendance rates, and the percentage of students making adequate progress. So you can see Edgewood. I did have a conversation with Tom. He was a little lower than everyone else. When we talked, he had also talked to his teachers, and from where they stood, that's not any different than in a typical year. That's okay. Pretty much what they would see as that 85% mark until kids get readjusted to school and moving forward. And the 5-12 range, you can see, again, the same structure there. You can see the high schools a little bit lower than the other buildings. Staff survey results. The union conducted a survey and shared those results, talking about a full-time return to school and the health conditions. 70% of the respondents said that the conditions have not improved enough to return to school, and 20% said they have. 19%, sorry. And then we moved the question, or I didn't do this survey, the union did, so... the question was changed to without social distancing. 70% still felt it was unsafe to forego the 6 feet of distance, and 19.1 felt it was safe. We also asked support staff the same, a lot of the same questions, and you can see that the answers are different. 46.7 felt that it is safe to return, or not safe to return, and 40 felt it was safe to return. And foregoing social distancing, 55% believed it was not safe to return without social distancing, and 36% thought it was safe to return. So as we think about options for the K-4 return, the tiered approach that I talked to you for the remaining grades, I talked to you a little bit about why it's 4 days a week because of our staffing constraints. There's kind of two possible options under that we can talk about. What I would like to share with you is a sample of how I asked Jason to break out the age ranges for me for Union County and Marysville as far as the younger students. That was interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So in Marysville, ages 0 to 4, we've had 11. Now, this is since the onset, and keep in mind, these are kids who live in our attendance area, might not attend our school.
Okay.
So you can look into that a little bit. In 5 to 10 range, and you can see it does increase as kids get older. There are 97 total cases in those age ranges, so we represent 65% of that data set. As you know, our case numbers, so I broke those out by age ranges, from alt K to 12th grade. So there would be, if we were to forego 6 feet of distance, there are give to gets in any model, right? There are give to gets in the hybrid model that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. So it certainly obviously would bring kids back on a more regular basis to school. It would help with our families who are struggling with childcare and with their jobs that we've definitely are sensitive to. It would help widen the classmate cohort, you know, more social relationships. There'd be minimal chance for new teachers and relocation, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But I guess the give to get would be the potential for spread and quarantine are increased, as you've heard this evening. And the chances to move to a full remote model are actually accelerated. So the higher those cases and quarantines become and the more people are out of school, the quicker we could move to a remote platform. So we've talked a lot about 6-foot distancing, and I told you we cannot pull off 6-foot distancing with the way classrooms are set up now. So if we looked at maximizing the space in the building and maximizing every staff member in the building, it would be possible to maintain 6 feet of distance. But again, with every model, there's give to get, and I think I need to give you a very clear example. So for example, we may have a teacher that has a class roster of 24. And the classroom fits 20. So 4 students have to come out of that equation and go somewhere. You'd probably take another 4 just to balance it out, but just for that example. We'd have to look at using spaces like music rooms, the cafeteria, larger classrooms, empty classrooms, and then we'd have to look at adults that we could align with the extra kids coming out of that block of 20. So we would look to maybe repurpose a unified arts teacher. You could repurpose an aide. You could possibly zoom the instruction into the students in those extra areas. So that is achievable. However, it does not look like school in the way that our kids have become accustomed to thinking about school. It is definitely a different format. The idea would be in that format that the adults would most likely trade spaces, not students, so that you didn't have the disinfecting demands on a regular basis, and that you know those would be flexible times, however the teachers establish that format. So you have kids in class, in school more often. It definitely offsets the struggle for childcare. It kind of addresses our concerns with 6 feet distance. But the instructional format is dramatically changed. The school experience doesn't look like maybe what our parents or students might expect that school experience to look like. There would be potential, in the example I gave you, for a student not to have the classroom teacher he or she might have right now. Mm-hmm. We have some places that a student might not even be able to stay at their home school, depending on space concerns. That would probably be more likely with a virtual academy kit coming back, but it is a consideration for us to keep in mind. And it limits our flexibility. Right now, we have a sub shortage as well, just as Mrs. Savage mentioned about High Point. And so we're able to use flexible staff to cover those spots, for example, coaches, mm-hmm. principals. But if we really maximize our entire staff, that would be a limitation. We wouldn't have extras to mm-hmm. float in. And it would definitely, our metric would have to be when we couldn't cover in a class with an adult, we'd have to put that into remote status at that time. So there's I guess, less leeway mm-hmm. in that option. And again, I already mentioned you may have teachers teaching outside of their area of expertise or grade level in that model. So one of the other things we wanted to understand is buildings who had started in this platform, in a everyday platform or all-in platform, and see what their experience looked like. So we've looked at Lakota, and this is a sample of their spreadsheet. It's also connected to give you every week. just to look at their elementary experience. And then the next slide shows Mason School District as well. And that's just 1 week, but you can click in the presentation to see the full report. And most districts that we're looking at are experiencing limited impact at the elementary range and higher quarantine numbers and et cetera at the older grades. I know Mason has had to shut down the high school, from my understanding, with 200 quarantines or in cases, but the elementaries have remained relatively intact.
Are these schools that are back 4 days a week or five?
They're back 5 days a week, yeah. But they started day one.
They started, okay.
Mm-hmm. And one of them, I don't have that percentage in front of me, one of them had a very large percent of students choose the virtual school. But in addition, both of those districts are significantly larger than we are. Most of the examples we could find were smaller districts, so it was we had continued to pay attention to Lakota and Mason as well. So I kind of hit these earlier, but as we continue to put these puzzle pieces together, I think these are those constraints on our thinking as we think about the design cycle. So those things that are we need to be cognizant of. And also our guiding principles that we shared. And those are those pillars that we've established. We want to continue to create that strong foundation for kids as we move forward. So I know it's a ton of stuff, right? and a lot of information. What kind of, if you have questions, what kind of questions can I answer for you? Or what other kind of information might we consider gathering for you to help inform your thinking?
I know that we ask parents that were virtual, would you send your kids back?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a percentage that said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked if, you're a hybrid and we went, would you go virtual? And there was a percentage that said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do those roughly equate, or is there a big shift in numbers, or do we have more kids coming back into the classroom or more on the virtual side?
So early indications would appear that more virtual would be coming back. But remember, there was 20% in the one slide that had not made a decision yet.
Yeah.
And were undecided. So.
Yeah.
And if they're at the same grade level and all of those pieces, I'm not sure.
Right.
And that number fluctuated in the summer, too, until we make that final declaration.
Just briefly to go back to the idea of the tiered.
Mm-hmm.
Was when you were putting that together, were you thinking that you'd retain the 6 feet or you wouldn't? Because then you had all those slides about the two different ways that school would look depending on whether we adhered to that. So when you're thinking about a tiered reintroduction, which way are you picturing?
When we took that to the task force committee at that point, we were not able to keep social distancing.
Okay.
The task force said, hey, social distancing is important to us, and so then we went to principals and just kind of flipped the buildings upside down, and certainly all of you have been in an elementary classroom, there's cubbies on the wall, so doing a straight square footage is not a possible task. It really takes going into each classroom and figuring that out, and then rethinking that entire format and using 100% staff and 100% of the space.
So I know we heard from the teachers' representatives, this idea of going back 4 or 5 days a week with the 6 feet of distance, from the slide that you presented, it sounds very disruptive. You even said it's not like school but as we know it. So have any of the teachers had an opinion about that prospect of the?
They're concerned about the disruption as well. They don't see it as being as fluid as it might be now. We just had a staff chat this morning, and then one a couple days ago, I guess that was last week, and talked about some of those things. I think also, you know, Zooming has challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching classes through a Zoom, and if we were projecting it in another room with an adult, I think they're very concerned about the they're very concerned about the instructional design implications for that.
I mean, you know, the reality is, even though that model, the classroom would look different, I mean, classrooms looked, or the educational process is different now, period. You know, I mean, whether you're in hybrid, remote, or you come back with social distance, without, it's going to be different.
Like these kids that go in 2 days a week, now we haven't been in the buildings, although we're
right.
Thinking about doing that when it makes sense to do so. But I'm picturing that they're not moving around the room much, correct?
So they are not. Like a typical, where we used to have kids in laundry baskets and some of those things,
right.
Because you can't have those things anymore.
Wait, we used to have kids in laundry baskets?
We do not, because you have to clean them and all those things, right? So,
right.
But they are making use of small group spaces,
yeah.
Because we have the additional divider, they're being cognizant of time, and their desks are spaced out. So they've removed, in essence, the extra desks, so say there were 24 in. A lot of times now you go in and there's just the 12 and there's space. But it does provide the opportunity for, I think Ryan talked, for that teacher to work with students individually for limited chunks of time.
Right. And I've seen them just walking past Edgewood. I have seen them outside a lot, you know, and so there is that concern as the weather starts changing, they can't go out and do projects that way. But having that space in the classroom, you know, when you've got half of your class in there, you can, they're creative, I think. They can come up with some kind of fun things to do, even when they're social distancing.
Yeah, it definitely looks more rank and file than
yeah.
what we've been promoting with student-centered classrooms, because it's forced to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the smaller class size certainly comes into play there.
So we have several families that have expressed determination that they're coming back to school kind of regardless of what model we're at from Virtual Academy, right? There's
we did not ask for a final answer yet, but we said, are you interested in returning? Yes.
Okay. So do you anticipate that if we would go to 4 days that there would be different families saying, I'm going virtual, I'm not doing 4 days.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think we'll have it going both.
Get a lot of flip-flop going on.
Right, right.
And there will be new teachers associated in that as well,
yeah.
Obviously.
So the families that are coming back off virtual, did they, I mean, the survey was a little bit vague.
Mm-hmm.
Was virtual school kind of too hard, or?
We did not ask
okay.
for a rationale.
Okay.
Just trying to gauge their interest at this point.
I think that personal responsibility in the community kind of plays a big part in this whole discussion. With the amount of cases that are spiking, the fact that we just went to red, I think today,
mm-hmm.
And there's fatigue. There's mask fatigue. You know, a lot of people up there are not wearing masks anymore. You go out, there's a lot of people in restaurants, you know, not even wearing a mask in, not wearing a mask out. So people are kind of tired of that. If parents want kids in school
4 days a week, which is what we're talking about. I think that the community as a whole needs to kind of, you know, make a commitment that we need to get this COVID under control. Am I thinking right, or do you? Yeah.
I think
it. People disagree with me.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of, you know, Diane has sent us quite a few articles, and that one from the New England Journal of Medicine. I mean, it specifically talked about, you know, that it was inexcusable to open non-essential services for adults this summer if you want kids to go back to school in the fall. It just says it forces students to remain at home, even part-time this fall, if you can't control the caseload in your community.
Well, I there's a huge open question hanging over this whole thing, and it came up twice tonight, once with the health director, and once with that medical group that you met with. The question is how much transmission happens in schools, especially among the different age groups. And unfortunately, we have two different answers to that question. And what Jason said was it's still an open question. Mm-hmm. But if that was answered in the best possible way for the kids, for the schools, which is that they don't transmit it much, mm-hmm. you see my point? Mm-hmm. Then we could bring them back regardless of what the numbers are in the community. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds crazy, but it's true. If we knew that the schools were not part of the problem, we could just open them up. But we don't actually know that yet. If I took everything.
Well, that was why I asked the question, Jason, that I did. And that the question I asked was, why isn't COVID being spread in the schools? And his response was, we're maintaining 6-foot distance. Everybody's wearing a mask. And, you know, the fact that we're doing those two things means that the kids, when they come to school, are not spreading. And the fact that we have 6 feet distance means that if one kid shows symptoms and is quarantined or infected, mm-hmm. that spread is stopped. It doesn't
right.
get transmitted to others in the classroom. The biggest hurdle, in my mind, is 6 feet. And it poses a priority question. We have said, as a district, the number one priority for us is safety of the kids. Now, our responsibility is to try to educate. And the health and safety people, the doctors, the research indicates that 6 feet and a mask is the key to controlling the spread of this disease because we can't stop it. And so, you know, part of what I'm struggling with is in order for us to bring kids back, we have to put them in a very different educational system than what they left, because it's not going to be the same, or we have to say that we're not going to follow the safety protocols, and that, in essence, the safety of the kids is not our highest priority. The academic side then becomes the priority.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a little more confusing than that, because if you have a system that's working, but you don't know why, you see the point, Dick?
Mm-hmm.
He listed all these factors that we're doing in the schools, and he said, that's why. But which of them? Which of them are actually determinative? I don't want to make the 6 feet thing into a fetish when we don't actually know that it's the 6 feet.
Well,
it could be the masking, it could be the ages of the kids.
Well, I think what I heard him say was it's not
one thing or another.
Or the distance, it's both.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, just having mask is not enough. Just having 6 foot distance is not enough. That what you have to have is both.
So there was an interesting comment from the community copy that mm-hmm. we posted last Saturday, and it kind of got me thinking. Talking about cohorting, okay? Cohorting students will kind of help limit their transmission.
Mm-hmm.
And the point the person was making is that cohorting in school 4 days a week is better than cohorting 2 days a week, and then the kids are everywhere for 5 days a week. And it's kind of an interesting point that I've been thinking about, is that there's a lot of truth to that, because when the kids are not in school, they may be at various family members, various daycares, interacting with lots and lots of different people, not just their class. So,
but doesn't that go back to the community responsibility? I know sometimes you don't, you know, depending on daycare situations, mm-hmm. you don't have choices.
I
know. But that is true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But just that, you know, well, you remember the discussion here there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, and the kids running around the neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
They're not wearing masks. There's no social distancing going on. There's swimming parties. There's mm-hmm. birthday parties. There's, you know, weddings, family reunions. You know, mm-hmm. all this stuff is going on, much of it maskless.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to consider that particular piece of information. Would the kids actually be safer in class? Then how to reduce the size of the class? Because we asked at the community coffee,
mm-hmm.
How would you feel about your child's teacher not being specialized in that area? And there's two distinct answers, and they kind of broke around the, I'm going to say, 8th grade level.
Mm-hmm.
Kindergarten to 7th grade, the parents were like, it's okay. 7th to 12th grade, they're like, no way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want an art teacher teaching
Math. Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was just kind of interesting feedback from those community members. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I also wanted to touch a little bit on the Thanksgiving break, and I know that there probably are a lot of questions and additional discussion, and I know Diane and I have talked about, you know, does it make sense for us to schedule a meeting next week and kind of let us absorb all of this information over the weekend and have a meeting where we simply discuss this idea of kind of moving back to a tiered return, you know, because at the earliest we're talking November 16th. That's what's out there on the table at the trimester for K-4. And I know Diane has already spoken about the decision for that Thanksgiving to January time frame, having a concrete decision by the end of this month, or before if possible. I think that we have absorbed a lot, and in my student achievement report, I'm going to be talking about information overload and how they say you need to take a break every once in a while so that some of this information can actually go into your long-term memory instead of getting lost. So I would suggest that we might want to consider that. And you know, if there's questions that are right on the top of your head now that you want Diane to answer, great. But otherwise, maybe consider scheduling something next week.
Yeah, I think we've reached a point where we need to make some decisions.
Yes.
If nothing else, just on the Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But if we're going to do something in terms of making a change from the hybrid model, we need to make sure there's plenty of time.
Right.
For everyone to prepare for that. So.
Right.
logistically it's significant, and that's fine. We've already made a timeline and have ideas in which to accomplish that, but it would be significant. So the sooner the better.
Two. So if we tried to do something early next week, possibly Tuesday, and I don't, Amy, are you still out there, Amy?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be fine with me.
And do you feel like that would, because I'm, you know, once a decision is made, then if we did say, yes, we want to move back to a tiered level, then what all would need to take place?
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to get final declarations,
right.
Directions.
Right.
So we'd have to get something out to parents to make that. Then we have to prepare rooms,
right.
Depending on if it's K-4 and which one of those options you'd want to consider. So that we'd have spaces, teaching assignments. There may, in fact, be, you know, depending on that shift, there may be available staff on either end, Virtual Academy or in the district,
right.
That we would look to
right.
Move if kids need to be relocated. We need to rerun transportation routes. But, you know, all of that stuff is outlined. Everyone's on notice.
Right, right. And that's, I mean, I just,
direction.
I don't, I'm not sure if parents understand, you know, just the reality of what they could be facing, you know, what, just the reality of the classroom.
I think the quarantine issue could really rear its head.
Yes.
That kids could end up quarantined potentially more than once.
Right.
Or 2 weeks at a time.
We've already had that happen. I thought he gave a great example.
Yes.
One person in the house tests positive, another one does. If you're the child, you're adding 14 days on each time. And the two things that I did not talk about, and I know we've talked about them before, but distance and time are the two factors for quarantine,
mm-hmm.
not face masks. So if you're within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more, that substitutes a possible exposure in your quarantine.
Okay.
If you have your face mask on, it doesn't, or both of you do, that doesn't factor into that equation. So I want to make sure that's very, very clear. Because a lot of people think, why am I face mask on? It doesn't matter. It's only distance and only time when it comes to making a decision on a quarantine.
So this is a state of Ohio rule? Because, I mean, there's lots of people that I'm sure have been closer for longer and not gotten sick. So
it's, from my understanding, it's the CDC guidance, and that's what Union County follows. So those are what they will ask. For example, on a contact, they'll get a positive case. They'll say, tell us everyone that was within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more. Sometimes we'll say they're both masks. That does not matter. It's distance and time only.
I guess I'm also curious, based on the surveys, I would be interested in knowing some of the improvements that are going on or have already happened with regard to the hybrid instruction model, you know, because I do, I mean, I've heard a lot of positives,
right.
About that. I mean, and nobody can disagree that your kids being home for 3 days during the school week isn't challenging. We know that. But I have heard a lot of really positive comments from both students and parents and staff. So knowing that, and then knowing some of the comments that were on that survey, just kind of curious for some examples of things that are happening.
Okay. Will we come back together?
Okay. Yeah, and also like the ongoing professional development.
Yep.
Because that, just like students, we know that our staff are, you know, you've got some that are wonderful with technology and this new model, and others that continue to struggle. and finally community support options, because I think that's, you know, that child care is on that list all the time as a challenge. And so what are some other options out there in our community, if any?
Also, several of the people that wrote letters, they referenced that they were grandparents taking care of kids. I think that might be one of the big struggle points. So any type of outside support group that could, be there as a tutor center or something like that.
Yeah.
Could that be a way to help those grandparents trying to deal with unified classroom and Google documents and stuff that they're not familiar with?
Mandy mentioned community support, and I think Jason mentioned it earlier, the fact that our community, the numbers are headed in the wrong direction, that we've moved from orange to red, and we've bounced back and forth from time to time, but currently we're doing that, and that locally we've had spikes after every holiday, and I know that's also what they report on the national news also. And we certainly have a lot of holidays coming in. So I think we need to set a meeting. I think we need to think about all the different things, because there's certainly a lot to digest and try to come up with some sort of an answer.
Right. Okay. We will do that. Okay, anything else, Diane?
No, I wondered if you were looking at dates.
I'm tentatively looking at Tuesday, next Tuesday.
That's fine with me.
That would be October 20th.
Yep, fine.
That's fine with me, Sue.
Okay.
Evening.
Five-ish?
Yep, I'll find a workspace for us.
Okay, great. So we will have a special meeting on October 20th at 5 o'clock. Location to be determined.
Okay. And let me know if there's any other information that you're seeking. I did confirm it's the CDC guidelines for the quarantine. I thought that's what it was.
Okay. All right. Ready to move on? With our treasurer's report?
I'll just throw this out there for you guys, since it sounds like your brains are fried. We're having a meeting next week. I can give my presentation next week, or I can do it now. We're probably talking 20 minutes of exciting financial news.
I know
for
next week.
That hurts. That was quick.
Well, that's just me. Sue, you don't have to tell me about studies that show that.
brain free, whatever you want to call it.
Is that all right with you guys?
Yeah. That's fine. I've already seen.
Yes, Dick and I attended the finance committee meeting, so I can tell you it's riveting. It is really important information, and I do think we need to be in a good frame of mind, because there's we'll have some more decisions to be made. Okay, then I will try and get through mine quickly here. As always, I sent out my student achievement and said I was going to focus on the six areas that boards can have an impact on student achievement. So I sent out the accountability, kind of questions about accountability. And I feel, again, I feel pretty good about what we're doing there, but I think it's important to look those over and remind ourselves of the importance of accountability in the district. Also shared that video that talked about other districts and just the challenges that we're all facing right now, but that reminder that we all share the same goal and focus on student achievement. Let's see, Capitol Conference coming up. I did want to spend a little bit of time on this, that official business discussion. I don't know, did you guys have a chance to look over the official business and those amendments?
I have not yet.
Okay. Well, I looked over and I guess, well, maybe, I don't know. There's one on racism and equity, and there were a couple statements in there that I wish there were a different word or something. So maybe I'll just share. Well, I don't know. We kind of need to have. They just talk in this one thing. They talk about. Here it is. It's imperative that Ohio implement meaningful solutions that eliminate racism, social injustice, disparate discipline, and bias, as well as foster equity to provide a catalyst for sustained improvement for students of color in impoverished communities. And I just thought, when it says Ohio implement meaningful solutions, I just like the idea of meaningful programs better, because I don't know that you can implement a solution. I don't know. It's not a big deal, but if nobody else has looked them over yet, maybe we still have time before the 29th, so our work session, it might be getting longer. I don't know. Okay, we'll move past that. Reminder that ED 411, they're going to have a virtual one this year on December 4th. And then the community coffee, again, you know, I think we've talked about that a little bit. It was nice to finally have a chance to meet with some people and hear comments and, you know, heard a lot of positives, heard a lot of questions, a lot of frustrations. So we're listening and we appreciate the input.
There were a lot of positive comments directed at the teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. There was a lot of positive that teachers were going above and beyond in many cases, that communication was great, that the teachers had been very responsive.
Yeah.
When there were questions, the frustration isn't with the teaching staff. The frustration is that they want their kids in school
right
more days.
Right.
So yep. I just want to make that clear. There is
right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The vast majority were very, very positive on what the teachers are doing and the new technology.
Yeah.
They're using to communicate with the students.
Okay. And I just kind of remind me a couple of requests for the live streaming, and I know Diane and I have talked a little bit about that, and I have a daughter-in-law in another district and who's done some of that live streaming, and sometimes these solutions may seem easy, you know, as it's, oh, just do that, but the reality sometimes of being in a classroom and juggling all of these different things is not easy at all. Mm-hmm. So again, it's great to throw out these ideas, because sometimes things can be juggled around a little bit and another solution can pop up that'll be an improvement. So, okay, that's my report, legislative report.
I sent out a report to everyone, and I guess the one thing just to informational to you is OSBA asked me to be on the College Credit Plus Review Committee. And so I'll be reading and preparing to talk about some potential changes to the College Credit Plus program. Those that are watching, that's where the high school kids take college classes.
Okay. Is that it? Okay. And we move on. Do we have a safety and drug committee report, Amy?
I do have a little bit of an update from Donna Burke. So there's been a drill challenge going around on TikTok that seems to be circulating a lot of around young people on social media. She has noted that this is very dangerous and can lead to hospitalization and even death. You can check out the article through the FDA and through WebMD. So I think that's something that we need to be aware of in the schools, because it is circulating through TikTok and social media.
Right.
We will have a meeting on Tuesday the 20th is our next regular safety meeting, so, and drug meeting. So I'll have more after that.
Okay. What time is that? That's not going to conflict with our meeting?
No,
good.
It's
okay,
in
good.
Daytime.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you. That was a good reminder, because I've heard about that Benadryl challenge myself. And
yes, and I think
more
that parents need to really be paying attention to this, because
right.
You know, it's all over the place right now.
Right. Thank you. All right. Next, I would accept a motion to approve draft minutes from both our September 17th regular meeting and our September 24th special meeting.
So
moved. Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Ms. Savage.
Yes.
Mr. Lutz.
Yes.
Ms. Powers.
Yes.
Ms. Devine.
Yes. Motion carries. Next, I would accept a motion to approve the Treasurer CFO action items.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Mr. Lutz. Second by Ms. Savage. Todd, do you have any comments?
Main thing I would point out are some of the donations. We have from our stadium drive, some of the pledges that came through. We had the $25,000 each from Honda Marysville and Impact 60. And also we just received a $4,000 literacy grant from Dollar General.
Great. Good news. Any other questions about the financials? Anything? Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And next, I would accept a motion to approve these superintendent items.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Diane.
I would like to highlight a resignation for retirement.
Yes.
When we had our meeting, Ed's been here for 33-ish
wow.
years.
Wow.
So we want to wish him well, and he's certainly a great person over at Mill Valley. Kids love him, staff loves him, so we wish him well on his retirement. Other than that, I have supplementals. We also have the library pretty usual stuff.
Yep. Yeah, always enjoy approving or voting on the library trustees. Appreciate the work they do. They're a great partner to our district, that's for sure. Any questions or comments of Diane?
Have we had any problems? I noticed we have one student teacher field placement. Most of the colleges student placement now. Is that something that's starting?
Most of them. We had some a couple months ago as well. Those all run through Jonathan's office.
Okay.
So, yeah, are you noticing very much of a change in the numbers of them available?
Actually, it's pretty comparable to previous years, and they're very appreciative of the opportunity to still learn and grow as university students. And too, it's beneficial to us and our students as well.
Definitely.
Provide even more intentional instruction with an extra set of hands in the classroom too. So, and they bring ideas as well.
Right. Good.
Yeah, I'd just like to bring Ed back up again.
Yes.
I think, and I'm not sure about this, I think he opened Mill Valley when that building was opened some years ago, it's nice. I think it speaks well to him, and I think also it speaks well to the district that he was able to come and work as long as he did and make the contribution that he has to the lives of all the kids that have gone through Mill Valley. So teachers are not the only educators that we have.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Yep. I know. Congratulations to him. We'll wish him well. Okay. Roll call then.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Vine?
Yes. Motion carries. And we are to the questions and comments. Mr. Luke.
Well, I'm looking forward to continuing this discussion next week. These are all really important issues. And I think one of the things we're hearing from families is they want to know that we're looking towards the future, that we're not just locked into one plan. And I think mm-hmm. that's evident that we're not, that we're looking at how can we move forward, how can we come up with even better plans than what we have right now. So I appreciate all the presenters today and all the information and all the work that all of them have done to help us figure out what's going on and how to move forward. And I also very much appreciate the involvement of all the parents sharing their point of view with us and all the work that they're doing pretty much every day, you know, with their kids. We really appreciate it quite a bit. Thank you.
Mr. Smith?
In the notes that we got, there were a couple of things that kind of jumped out at me as I went through those. The first building that was the high school, and there was mention in there of principal surveys. And I know that the principals, although we got a lot of survey information, principals have been gathering a lot of information that's been shared with the teachers to help the teachers and the students do a better job of educating the kids, educating themselves, and the teachers being in a position to help the kids with that. And another thing kind of jumped out at me was the from the early college high school, in that there was an engineering open house with the Hearts of Unlimited Boundaries. Mm-hmm. And Principal Chafin was there. And we had students that built customized electric controlled personal transport vehicles, the Flex Quad, an all-terrain four-wheel electric vehicle designed to provide hands-free off-road driving experience for those that have disabilities and mm-hmm. so forth. And that's the kind of educational experience that our district is working very hard to try and support. I think it's great that our students had an opportunity to participate in this or that students did. I'm not even sure that it was students from our school, but that students were able to do this. And that Mr. Chafin was there to kind of see what happened and how all that went on. So I thought that was noteworthy. So mm-hmm. great things happening in every building.
For sure. Yep. Thank you. Ms. Savage.
I know we kind of talked about the Reavers Homecoming Parade last meeting. Just a kind of shout out to the sports teams that have been able to compete this season, mm-hmm. the outdoor activities, and it's a great opportunity for them to have a little bit of friendship and competitive, good-natured fun.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to the football team for how they proceeded through the state finals. And I guess that's all I want to say.
Okay, great. Ms. Powers, Amy.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for all the information tonight. It was very interesting. So we'll get to work next week, and I want to say congratulations also to our football team for being the champions. And that'll be it.
Okay. Todd, any comments?
No, thank you.
Okay. Diane?
The only thing I wanted to reiterate is you know, the data that we showed tonight is a testament to the hard work of our staff. They are doing everything they can to accommodate and meet the needs of our kids and balance, you know, their lives too outside of school
right.
and demands. And I couldn't be more impressed or more proud of the work they're doing on a daily basis to move our students forward. And I have no doubt that they're up to any challenge we'll put before them. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that they're just knocking it out of the park in rough circumstances. And also, on my notes, good luck to the Monarchs tomorrow night. And we still lack clarity 100% maybe with what's going to happen with winter sports.
Okay.
So stay tuned on some of those issues coming up.
Okay. All right.
And Diane, thank you for saying that about all the teachers and the staff, because they are doing an excellent job.
I know. Yep. And you're right, it's like not just teachers, it's everybody out there. Our tech department done an amazing job with our meetings and with everything else going on out there, and just everyone with remote learning, bus drivers, custodians, lunch people, it's just everybody's willing to jump in and do whatever's needed. So we really, we couldn't be more proud of them and grateful. I wanted to do a reminder, the FFA, we got a letter tonight and maybe an email as well, but FFA is currently doing their fruit sale. You can go to MarysvilleAgScience.com if you want to order something. Let's see, also this is National Bullying Prevention Month, and I do think that one of the positives is that we really haven't had many, disciplinary issues so far this year. So maybe that's a positive of the hybrid model. I don't know. It's also National School Lunch Week and National School Bus Safety Week next week. Some of the things in the building notes that jumped out to me between Creekview and Bunsold was their real focus on social emotional help, and they talked about their partnerships with both PASS and Gatekeepers and Mary Haven, and with Navigators and the Signs of Suicide presentation. And so I really appreciate that, because regardless of what data shows, if they're the same this year as last year, we know in general, not just our district, not just our community, I mean, the entire world is struggling now, and people are stressed for sure, and when adults are stressed, kids pick up on it. So I appreciate their focus on that social-emotional side of education. Really just want to thank Jason Orsina, your medical advisory group, the superintendent's task force. I know they've spent a lot of time looking at data, having discussions, and I appreciate their input as well. And I think it also reflects the challenges of these decisions that we're faced with, because there's, you know, some areas there's clear consensus, but for the most part, there's still more questions than answers, I think. So thanks to our administrators, staff, the students and families, everybody who's completed the surveys, because I'm sure there's tons of survey burnout right now too, but truly the answers and the comments that are provided in those surveys are really helpful as we move forward. So please continue to fill them out. So I just know that we're gonna have some really good conversation next Tuesday, and I would anticipate that from that meeting, it would be my goal to kind of have some things, some dates out there, and some pretty clear ideas of what we'd like to do. So, with that, I would accept a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers. All right, Amy. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carried, and we are adjourned at 8:10. Thank you.